What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
The Premier League on OTB. Exclusive Premier League live commentaries every Sunday. The very best expert analysis on your phone and for free. Download the OTB Sports app now.
OTB AM with Gillette. Put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.
7:30 Friday morning, you're watching OTB AM. Adrian with you this morning alongside in studio Owen Shane. Good morning to you, Owen.
Adrian, welcome back.
This all feels very normal. I know, like, we're all sort of fed up saying, oh, I think we get back to normality now. If one more person says that to me, there might be, you know, likely
to be in a whole world of pain.
Stare. But it does feel as if we're getting there, Owen. This is a good step forward.
Well, what's your normality involved then that sparked you in such fine fashion this morning?
The normality would be coming back into studio here for a couple of days a week, which has begun, and sitting alongside you. I mean, in close proximity, we can't quite reach out and touch each other here, Owen, which I'm sure you're happy
Thankfully.
About. But this is as close to another sort of human being from outside of my four walls that I've been over the last 18 months. So it's good.
I'm glad to be able to provide that intimacy in your life, Adrian. That's all I'm here for.
Let's move on from this topic.
We missed you the last couple of weeks. Where have you been?
I've been away. I was having sampled the delights, as you know well, of one Gaeltacht area in the preceding weeks of West Kerry. I made my way to West Galway. Out in the next stop, Boston, as they tell you as you sort of wander around out there. The delights of Connemara, the delights of Inishbofin. Wandered into Mayo for a little while, which is dangerous territory at the minute.
And what's your bunting take on Mayo then?
Well, I tell you something. I must actually dig out some of these photographs. My bunting take on Mayo is that where Kerry are lacking, Mayo are not short of a bit of bunting. And everywhere you go, there is just green and red absolutely everywhere. I was out for a couple of pints one night. Some guy comes into the pub, little pair of beautiful little sort of Adidas kicks on him, green and red all over. That's just the way it is. Every window you see, there's painting up. Went out for a cruise around Clew Bay, which is brilliant. All brilliant information about growing your whale on. I don't know how familiar you are with the story, but the Pirate Queen, pretty amazing stuff. Beautiful views, great cruise, great company, lovely day. And then to round everything off, the guy who was belting out a few tunes in the corner sings the red and green of Mayo. It was
Green and red, or have they done a remix?
Whichever version it is. They're crazy. They're absolutely buck crazy for it down there. We climbed up a bit of Crowpatrick and everybody's up. Pretty much, if you're from Mayo, you can recognise a Mayo person going up Crowpatrick at the minute by the fact that they're on their hands and knees all the way up, holding the green and red in their hands and praying to God that they can get it done next week.
And did you find the team hiding up there, or what was your experience?
They were probably a little bit further up. We only got about a third and had to retreat. But yeah, there's a lot of prayers going on at the minute. But no, there's definitely no escaping the fact that there's, like, honestly, you know, because we had this conversation before, that in Kerry, in my wanderings around, you could definitely travel a long time around Kerry and not know, there's nothing to know about right now, but you could not know that there was involvement deep in the championship ongoing, and that excitement was at sort of, I don't know what it gets, 7 or 8 out of 10 at that stage in Kerry. But like, there's no escaping it around Mayo. Everybody's talking about it. It's on every shop window, and as I said, everybody's singing about it.
Yeah, well, like, it is a county that absolutely loves the experience of All-Ireland Final Week. And I think there's also an appreciation in the county that, yes, there has been numerous occasions of heartbreak, but it is also a real testament to the teams that they've had that they're consistently in these All-Ireland finals and just always there or thereabouts. And it's been an incredible 10-15 years for that county in terms of getting to the biggest day of all. So I'm sure there's an element of them that's like, you kind of got to enjoy this, because it is, of course, the standards within that team will suggest that it's not going to be a success unless they get the big prize in a few weeks. But I think, as the stories have already been told of the great Mayo teams, even of the middle of the last, of the 2010s, for example, I think there's a quiet kind of appreciation for how good a team they are and how good a team they were. I know this is quite a new team and some of those players are still around, so it's kind of a mix and match of them. But I think there's kind of a sense, I suspect anyway, of them enjoying the ride because it's a pretty good one at the moment.
This, I don't want this to sound trite, right, but like I do think that there's, you know, all this chatter, this cliche that comes out every time that a big result like that was landed by Mayo beating Dublin a few weeks back, and everybody says, well, I really hope that's not their All-Ireland. Like, if it is, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Like, if they end up getting beaten in the final, and look at, I think that there are probably 31 counties and beyond hoping upon hope that Mayo can absolutely get it done. But there's nothing wrong with going buck crazy at having had, like, it felt like on that day that the outpouring that happened on the pitch afterwards, and they couldn't help themselves, and nor should they, that was like them winning All Ireland. And there's no, you shouldn't not try to embrace that. Like, go
100%.
For it.
100%. All, like, on two levels. The first level is, say, the competitive aspect to that tone of, oh, they played their All-Ireland. Say if people start saying that if they get beaten by Tyrone, that's kind of like they needed to be in All-Ireland mode to beat Dublin. The game went to extra time, for God's sake. They were 6 points down. They had to treat the game like an All-Ireland. But second of all, you can't go around telling people what to feel when they are attached to their sporting team. And there was a similar tone after they won the league final in 2019, to sort of, oh, they brought their kids on the pitch and they were doing laps of honour after they won the league final in 2019. I don't know, give over. Like, I mean, they've won a national title for the first time in how long in Croke Park. It was a brilliant day. It was a great match. It was a phenomenal atmosphere with thousands and thousands of people in Croke Park. Like, you can't really tell people not to feel something because it's not an All-Ireland final. Like, what's the point otherwise if the All-Ireland final is the only thing you can actually feel some sort of joy towards?
Yeah, a lot of people would have you believe that they should be going around with their sort of glum faces afterwards, yeah, and playing it all down. And it's a classic GAA thing, by the way. Absolutely classic to go around looking as glum as could be when you're hopping out of your skin with delight. And
also, it has absolutely zero impact on whether or not they're going to win this All-Ireland, how happy they were after winning a semi-final. They've had 4 weeks.
Exactly.
Even if it was 2 weeks, it doesn't make one blind bit of difference. It doesn't matter how many Adidas kicks are currently leathered in green and red. It doesn't make a difference to the result whatsoever. It's just a very interesting fan culture, and they're... Yeah, it's an incredible county. So, I mean, your holiday stories of Galway have just turned into talking about how great Mayo are.
Good morning to all our
Galway viewers as well.
They're having a huge amount of shout-out down there, and we'll come to Galway in just a second because some interesting stuff across the back pages this morning. One quick word, and I'm sure you're sick to the back teeth of thinking and talking about it now over the last while, but it did strike me as well, at having been in Kerry not that long previously, the impact. We tend to have a bit of a joke and a laugh about the heroism and how invested Kerry people are in the outcome of the football team, but it did strike me that, like, there is going to be a long, that almost bit of a cliche, but like certainly a long, dark, deep winter of malcontent now, and people we talk about it and we joke about it because people actually care so much about it. It was the point that was made by I think it was Ger was on the show yesterday when you were chatting to Eamon Dunphy about the fact that we were so heartbroken at the full-time result against Portugal because we cared so much. And like, as much as we joke and have the crack about Kerry, like, there are a lot of people who care a lot about Kerry football, and a long few months.
Well, thank you for bringing it up this morning, Adrian. Because this is the end now. We're 6 days out from it. This is surely the last thing.
But
what happens next now is that the nation forgets about poor old Kerry, and it just becomes a period of self-reflection and self-flagellation over the next little while. At least we've had great sports writing and maybe some half-decent sports broadcasting over the last few days from people outside of Kerry to, you know, tickle our bellies a little bit and say, aren't you great? And they'll be back. Well, actually, that hasn't been the tone whatsoever, but maybe you could pick that nugget out of a few pieces here and there. But this is where it starts to change from next week. It's all about Mayo and it's all about Tyrone. And after that, it'll be all about whoever wins and maybe even about whoever loses that final. And people will forget about poor old Kerry, and then it's down to the people down there to start talking about it and keep talking about it, and it'll become a very, very miserable winter, no doubt. So, yeah, thank you for bringing it up, and I'm glad we can put a full stop on that.
Well,
this morning.
Just give me one more before we do that. Entertain me for a second. Is the feeling that there will be a change of management now, because it's the only thing that people talk about in the aftermath of it, is it likely, as the days have gone on afterwards and the dust has settled a little bit, that that's the most likely outcome here? That'll be the fix that will have people believing that next year they can turn the corner.
I don't know, to be honest. I don't think anybody knows. Nobody seems to have much information. It was actually quite interesting in the Kerry's eye yesterday. They had, seemed to contact the entire county board for comment on the defeat and the management team, and everybody got back saying no comment. So I don't think anybody has any idea what's going to happen, to be honest. And I said it on Monday show, and my suspicion is still the same, that Peter Keane will still be manager at least next year.
All right. We did mention, we leave it there. Go on. Thanks. I mean, if anybody wants to have any comments.
Well, it's actually, I'm saying thank you on behalf of everybody who's with us this morning, because they are sick to the teeth of us talking about them.
If anybody has any questions or comments to make about Kerry, we'd be happily bring it up a bit later in the show as well. Shane O'Neill has left Galway was the big news that emerged last night, that a couple of years in and a disappointing year, certainly this year, he's now left. And so much chat this morning across the back pages about who is potentially going to take over. The Examiner have done a very deep piece with all the runners and riders and the various credentials that they have. One of them, and it's Colm Keyes picks it up in the Independent as well this morning, is David Fitzgerald. As a possibility, he's now obviously a free agent. He would be heading into what I think would be, as quoted in one of the papers this morning, his 36th year of involvement in the GAA if he was to take up that job, between obviously playing and managing.
With no break either, right?
With no break, as I believe it from that piece today. It doesn't look like a great fit to me, I have to say, Galway and Davy. There probably was a time where I thought that might have been the case, but it's obviously a headline grabber appointment. And no matter where he goes, that's probably the case. But like from a Galway point of view, you have to think that 2017 looks like it's really far in the rearview mirror now at the minute. You look at Limerick and the strides that they've made, and you know, where often he gets it right on the pitch, Davy does bring obviously that passion and that focus to whatever team he ends up going to. But it can, let's face it, turn into a bit of a circus of stories and distractions and stuff off the pitch that Galway already have plenty of and could badly do without. I think they, for me, need to be thinking about how they life post Joe, like, you know, from a playing point of view, how they can try and help bridge that transition, because it's going to be like a player who pulled them over the line on so many occasions over the last number of years. And also, how do they get up to Limerick's fitness levels? Like, I think these are the big questions that Galway need to be asking themselves, and they need to appoint a manager, and there's plenty of options. One of them, Geoffrey Linsky, been spoken about, is a huge success, obviously, at minor level. Maybe didn't happen so much at under 21 for him, but somebody, and I don't know if he's exactly the right man, but somebody who is thinking about it, you know, there maybe is an opportunity. Mikey Kiley, obviously leaving Limerick, the strength and conditioning coach, to join Ulster Rugby during the week is big news, and that could be like the biggest development in the hurling world by the time the championship kicks off next year. So we'll see. But I think it needs somebody there who's not, whether he goes out of his way or not is a moot point. It's just something that happens with Davy, that it's all the headlines and it's all that bit of a circus around. He's appearing on the back pages, he's talking about this, he's not talking about the other. Galway needs somebody who's going to deliver a cutting edge that's going to get them closer to Limerick.
I think, yeah, I'd agree with that. I think that the Davy Fitz appointment maybe would have made more sense had Joe Canning still be around. Maybe like you'd get a tune out of him for one or two more years, and that would make sense for me with Davy. It feels that the Galway project is a little bit more long term. That being said, you talk about the strength and conditioning of Limerick, and the perceived wisdom over the last few years had been that Galway were second in line SNC wise to be able to challenge Limerick, that they are naturally just a big team and they're well conditioned, and that they are the ones who might be able to take them down with the right manager there. And it feels that Galway's stock has just plummeted over the last two seasons, in particular ever since they've lost that All-Ireland final to Limerick in 2018. So they're in a very interesting position where it feels that their ceiling is still quite high despite the retirement of Joe Canning, because of the fact that they have the natural physique required to potentially take down Limerick. I was speaking to somebody from Galway a few weeks ago before the departure was confirmed, and they were kind of making the point that there sounds that Micheál Donoghue could return to the job. And I'm not sure, was that idle speculation or not, but it kind of makes sense if you want to try and get a quick return. Now, the Linsky appointment, he would know all those great minor teams. I mean, Galway have been so good at that level over the last little while, and a number of those players who will come through to the top level, and the underage coaches who've actually got their experience there, not so much the players, but the coaches who've got their underage experience in, seem to be making the best senior managers at the moment, it turns out. So he will definitely be an option. When it comes to the Davy Fitz connection, like, he did work with Cyril Farrell with LIT, and he would have obviously quite close proximity if he's going to commute from Clare or whatever up to the county. You could see why Davey would want it or why he would be interested in. I think it's a good project for any manager to be involved in for what I just said. I don't think they're as far away as maybe people think. The problem is Limerick have pulled away rather than and of course Galway have fallen back a tiny bit, but it's an exciting project, but Galway kind of need to get this right themselves, because there's an opportunity for them to do something special. It's not guaranteed to be wilderness years for them.
Yeah, the Micheál Donoghue thing I think is absolutely 100% a live option. I think there'd been a bit of a falling out with the county board, as tends to happen with these things. So like, whether, you know, maybe he's been away a few years and all that gets kind of forgotten about, you know, in the same way that James Horne did obviously with Mayo a number of years ago. So look, we'll see how that unfolds. And do, if you have any thoughts on it, do fire those into us, by the way. Interested to hear what people have to say about that as well. And yeah, so we'll see how all that plays out. I'm sure there'll be developments on it over the next little while. By the way, some breaking news from the Paralympics for you this morning as well. Another gold for Team Ireland today. Katie Georgian Levy and Eve McChrystal have done it again. They've won gold in the B road race, time of 2:35.53. Really incredible stuff from those pair. They've done Ireland so proud at the Paralympics. Medal number 3. For the two of them. It really is incredible stuff. We're going to have more reaction from that, and Phil Egan will give us more details on it a little bit later in the show as well. We haven't really mentioned Ireland just yet. Owen, obviously we'll get to that in a little bit. There's more updates as well. The possibility of Callum Robinson coming back into the mix ahead of the Azerbaijan game tomorrow. We're going to be talking to Karen Duggan about that a little bit later in the show as well. And an interesting story that Arthur and yourself picked up on Fionnán Sheehan writing this week.
Yeah, making the point in yesterday's Irish Independent, I think it was, about the GAA's missed opportunity maybe for a greater capacity at the All-Ireland football final. And this isn't necessarily some sort of, oh, I'd love to be going sort of thing. I think it is genuinely a point about the missed opportunity for the GAA in terms of making a point on vaccines, more so than a missed opportunity on getting 20,000 extra people in there. So for anybody who missed this during the week, the opportunity was there for the GAA to get to 60,000 for the All-Ireland football final between Mayo and Tyrone. And they turned it down on the basis that they wouldn't be able to get the vaccine passport requirements up and running in time, that they wouldn't have a trial event to test this out, because obviously if you go to 60,000, the fact was that you would need to have COVID certs basically to enter. Like, his piece yesterday makes the point that Mayo has one of the highest vaccination rates in the country, seventh in the league table with a 94.8% vaccine uptake, well above the 91.86% national average, he says. So that's 19 out of every 20 Mayo people are vaccinated. He contrasts it obviously with the situation in Northern Ireland as a whole. We don't have specific figures as far as I'm aware on Tyrone in general, but obviously the situation in Northern Ireland has just got severely worse over the last little while. The death rate has kind of baffled a lot of people up there, maybe down to a very ambitious reopening and the confusion with regards to social distancing, with regards to masks and no sort of vaccine passports when it comes to indoor dining and all that sort of thing. So naturally that's caused a huge spike in figures. And then obviously we had the situation in the build up to the Kerry game, which we are not going to get into now, but it's worth reminding ourselves of what Fergal Logan did say in his interview with Declan Bogue in the build up to the game about not everybody being vaccinated in the camp, which definitely caused a bit of consternation going into that game, that they did get the extra week after the first week. They got their 2 weeks and it still didn't have everybody vaccinated, because he was making the point that he didn't want a lad being out of training for a couple of weeks due to side effects to the vaccine. So the court of public opinion, I would suggest, isn't judging Tyrone greatly when it comes to vaccines and their approach to COVID over the last little while. So Fionnán Sheehan was basically making the point that why are we still playing by these rules when essentially Tyrone haven't done their bit for the vaccine? He says, one of our greatest national organisations had a chance to take a stand for the vaccination effort. Worse yet, by not insisting on match-going fans being vaccinated, the GAA will be kowtowing to the vaccine hesitant once again. So that's his point. Maybe there is a legitimate case to be made from the GAA's perspective that they couldn't get this vaccine cert situation up and running on time. But they are checking bags outside. Could they have got extra scanners for people at that level of the ground before you actually show your ticket to go in? Maybe. I mean, there's plenty of people all around the world in different sporting organisations who have much higher security than the GAA do when it comes to getting into to their big stadiums. And you'd wonder if GAA could easily follow a blueprint on that front.
Yeah, it does feel as if the issuing of the certs is a bit of an issue to begin with. So, like, we're obviously used to using them here. It doesn't seem as if they're as far down the track with issuing them in Ulster. So there might have been a bit of a need to, in Northern Ireland, so there might have been a need to move that along. It doesn't seem as if that was pursued as an option at all. And you even mentioned the number zone. And yeah, you're right, it doesn't check any specific numbers in Tyrone specifically, other than to say that there are a couple of hotspots there. So
yeah, that's Oman in particular is
something. Yeah, that's definitely something worth factoring in. But I was definitely surprised reading beyond Fiona Sheehan's piece about the response from the GAA about it, Larry McCarthy specifically. Now look, if the starting point is that actually anybody coming from Tyrone doesn't have a vaccine, then all of this is moot anyway. But I don't know why you wouldn't just come out and just say that that's the biggest issue that we have here, or to lobby the Northern Ireland executive or whatever they need to do to try and push that forward. Because like the thing was, we did have time. Like, that's the one sort of advantage out of all this. There was time to go and look at this, some of the stuff. I'm not sure, and there's not great detail yet about how much this was explored, but that Larry McCarthy, so if you assume then, and it seemed from some of the responses that he was giving, that you were to assume that people from Mayo, obviously, and they would have, and anybody beyond there, including people from Tyrone, let's assume that they all have their certs, that he said that the GAA hadn't trialled vaccine certs, that it wasn't just something that they'd done. And then when he looked at it, he said that, and as I said, like, there seems to have been enough time to do this, but he was saying that somehow they'd come up with the figure of 3 minutes that it would take to check your vaccine cert, your ID to accompany that, and your match ticket. I mean, I have been going to venues for the best part of 40 years, and 3 minutes to check one individual's three items. It's not much more than a match ticket. Also around Croke Park, they're incredibly efficient at being out and about with the loudhailers. You've all been in there. They'll be out and about with the loudhailers in advance, and they'll be telling you to have your match ticket ready. You just do the exact same thing. Have your match ticket, have your vaccine cert, have your passport, your ID, whatever it is at the ready. Now look, it's going to cause issues. There are going to be people who don't have vaccine certs or are going in on somebody else's or whatever it is, and you're always going to have a bit of that anyway. But the idea that it would take 3 minutes seems extreme to me. And you know, but also, could we not have just gone and had a look at it, like, if that was an option? Fiona Sheehan sort of alludes to it. It does raise the bigger question, obviously, then at some point or another, that you're going to check all the paying punters that are going in the gates. They're all going to have a vaccine cert, have to have a vaccine cert to get in. And then what are you going to do with the Tyrone squad?
Yeah, this is an interesting topic of conversation now, because this is far from unique to Gaelic games. This is a situation that the Premier League are going to be faced with in October, where fans into Premier League grounds will have to provide proof of vaccination. When they get into the ground, they will more than likely be watching at least a couple of players in every game who have no proof of vaccination because they haven't been vaccinated. There was that situation a couple of weeks ago where Fabian Delph deleted a strange conspiracy theorist post from his Instagram account, which had, I guess, issued vaccine sceptical information, to say the very least. We have cases of vaccine hesitancy at best and vaccine scepticism across the Premier League. You look at tennis, for example, at the moment. You have to, well, barring the flooding in New York at the moment. Other than that, once the flooding stops, you'll have to show a vaccine passport to get into Flushing Meadows to actually watch the tennis, where 50% of the players that you're watching are unvaccinated. So there is that strange kind of hypocrisy almost within all of these sports, where fans are being asked to show vaccine passports and the players that are watching are not vaccinated at all. The GAA, though, obviously unique insofar as these players are all members of the community. They're not in a bubble, and they will be socialising if they win the All-Ireland with the Tyrone fans if they win the All-Ireland in the aftermath. So it is a bit different on that front. But that is the real kind of, I guess, irony in all sport at the moment, that a lot of people are going to be watching unvaccinated players, despite the fact that being a spectator now almost requires you to be vaccinated.
Yeah, I don't know, Owen, right? You get to the end of all that sort of investigating whether it works or not, and you decide it doesn't work, actually, it's going to take us 4 minutes. We've trialled it. Here's the data. It just doesn't seem as if any of that, you know, he openly admitted there weren't, the expertise didn't exist to have a look at it. That's the bit I just can't get my head around. I don't mind if you get to the end of that and you go, the data says, computer says no. Grant, we've looked at it. That's the end of it. I just can't get my head around it. There was, you can't say there wasn't enough time. This hasn't just landed on us. Like, it was a viable option before the semi-final. We had weeks and weeks of notice. And even after that, could we not just look at it? It just feels as if there was plenty of time.
The one thing I would just say in the GAA's defence a little bit here is that why would they turn down an extra 20,000 tickets? Like, they're an organisation who've been, I guess, stuck for revenue. Every organisation's been stuck for revenue. I mean, maybe not. Like, maybe they're just thinking this is not worth the hassle.
I don't know.
But like, that extra 20,000, it's basically €100 for a ticket. If we assume that they're all stand tickets, for example, do the maths. That's like that's a lot of money that the GAA could have made by ramping it up a little bit. And I don't know. Like, it's you'd like to think that they definitely looked into this and just thought to themselves, we're not going to get this turned around in time. Whether it's like employing extra staff, whether it's the actual technology to do it. Or the logistics involved.
It seems to me as if they're saying that they didn't do that. And look, it's a fair point. And maybe the Tyrone thing was an issue. As you say, it's existed in other sports. There's a template there for it. I don't know. And Kenny, the dad, by the way, has been in touch with us on YouTube. And good morning to you, Kenny, saying that issuing certs in Northern Ireland, not a problem. Everyone has access to the NHS app, which produces a cert for you whenever you log on. I was at home at the weekend and it worked in every pub that I went to. So, right. I mean, that's just, again, another reason to think that we could have at least had an old gander at it. It's 5 to 8. It's Friday morning. If you have more thoughts on that, do lash them into us, please. You're watching OTB AM, brought to you by Gillette. Good mornings start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. Here's a bit of a flavour for you of what's coming up on the show between now and 10 a.m. this morning. We're going to hear from, I was going to say hero of the night, and look, it maybe he still was, from the Portugal game the other night, Gavin Bazunu, some reaction from that Portugal defeat and looking ahead to Azerbaijan, and plenty more reaction as well from the game upcoming shortly in the next couple of moments. We'll let you know what's happening across the back pages in a few minutes' time. After that, more analysis of the match the other night with Karen Duggan, former Republic of Ireland international. Plus, we'll talk to her about the return of the WSL tonight and over the weekend. Some big developments there too. Liverpool captain Niamh Fahey will join us live on the line. Galway woman Niamh Fahey from 8:30 this morning. We're going to talk about Liverpool and WSL 2. We're going to talk about the pay parity that's been announced from the FAI. Brilliant move during the week. Congrats to the FAI and everybody involved in getting that done. And I'm sure we'll touch on events with Stephen Kenny's Republic of Ireland team as well. That's coming your way from 8:30 this morning. Owen's been speaking to Shebby O'Shea. I'm sure we'll touch on some Mayo. And needless to say, some All-Ireland final chat with that coming your way at 8:45 this morning. Paralympics update with Phil Egan. That brilliant news this morning that Katie Georgeton-Levy and Eve McChrystal have won gold again for Team Ireland in Tokyo. Phil, a bit more meat in the bones for that for you at 9 this morning. A live crappy quiz. What could possibly go wrong, Owen? Who's contending this morning?
It's yourself and Ger and Phil.
Oh, amazing. Well, Phil, another win for Phil in the bag already. I think we can assume that. And then we've John Giles coming your way from 9:30 this morning. So that's what's coming up on the show. Do keep in contact with us, by the way, right over the course of the morning, please. Love to hear your thoughts on the football, on the GAA, wherever it is you're having yourself. Please do fire your thoughts in. We said we'd get you some reaction from the game the other night and looking ahead as well. We're going to begin with the Irish goalkeeper, and it looks like he's going to be in this position for some years to come if he continues anywhere near the form that he had against Portugal the other night. It's Gavin Bazunu, and here he is on that penalty save against Ronaldo.
Like I said, I try to watch videos of every single player I'm coming up against, who's most likely to take them, and I did the same on this game with Dean Kiley. We had spoken about it before the game as to what would happen if there was a penalty in the game.
And Usually,
that was my feeling. I had a strong feeling that he would go that side, depending on his run up and things like that. But I stuck to my gut, and I was happy to be able to make the save.
Ah, yeah, amazing stuff. It was a great still photograph. I don't know if you saw it, Owen, where it seemed as if he actually had clocked him right in the face. That he had sort of got himself. He had obviously picked his side, fully committed. I guess as a goalkeeper, you're like every part of your body has got the opportunity to save this thing, but it caught him flush in the face.
Did it?
That's what it seemed to me from the still. Now, look, it could have been misleading.
Oh, I didn't realise that at all. Maybe the It probably is a misleading still, is it? I don't know. I just thought it was a good save. It hit him flush in the face. That
well, it's still a good save.
The opposite, well, absolutely, going the right way and all that. But it's interesting that himself and Dean Kiely had done their homework. I mean, you're obviously going to do it when you've got such an obvious penalty taker there and such a big body of work to actually analyse. And I don't know, it was that moment and the Bernardo Silva miss late on in the game, which both kind of were threads in a famous Irish win that wasn't. And it's just mad. I mean, luck just doesn't exist, Adrian, it turns out, because those two moments would have suggested that Ireland's luck was in. But no, they were false dawns.
Two things about Gavin Bazuna particularly. One, that, like, Jesus, like, for him personally, he must be thinking he would have been so close if, obviously, Ronaldo hadn't scored the two goals he got, or particularly the first one. Bazuna is suddenly the story of world football. You know, that he's saved the penalty. That means that Ronaldo hasn't overtaken Ali Day, and that would have been the story. And he comes so close to that. And on the other side, I mean, spare a thought for Quevin Keller and all of this, right? Like, he's the sliding doors moment of the close call that Stephen Kenny would have had to put either Bazunu or Quevin Keller in goal. Like, look at it. Quevin Keller is a class goalkeeper, and we've seen that, and he's done it for Liverpool, and I'm sure he'll go on to have an amazing career. But, like, he could, that sliding doors, like, cigarette paper sort of decision between the two of them, you know, might result in Gavin Bazunu getting 120 caps for Ireland and Quevin Keller getting 15 or 20.
It's a good point. Once you're in, you're in sometimes, and if you're good enough, you're not going to lose your jersey. And it does seem that Stephen Kenny is going to judge this on who plays well for Ireland as well as anything else. And Quevin Keller is just in a really tricky position right now, where he's too good to be sent on loan and not good enough to be better than Alisson. And there's not many goalkeepers in the world that are better than Alisson. You could probably count them on one hand if there's any. Yeah. So what happens next in Gavin Bazunu's career is going to be interesting as well. He's obviously, what, 3 years younger than Kelleher. So when he gets to Kelleher's age and his level of experience, having got a bit of first team experience down in the lower leagues, will he then be faced into a position of being Ederson's backup at Manchester City? Or does he try and get a permanent move somewhere else? Because that'll be a very, very hard job for him to take if he can try and get him out of goal. So it just happens when you get to that stage in your career as a goalkeeper, and it's a very hard thing to do, like, especially if you're at Liverpool and you're Quevin Keller and you've played in the Champions League last season and Jurgen Klopp is giving you a big hug after the game. Like, I mean, you kind of want to fight for that manager, and you want to, like, that's the sort of manager that you want to say to, oh, I'm happy being back up, I'm ready whenever, boss. Yeah. You don't really want to turn around and say, yeah, I want to go and get game time, even though that's what's going to propel you perhaps back ahead of Gavin Bazunu. So You do feel for Quevin Keller a little bit, but Ireland are in a brilliant position when it comes to the goalkeeping role at the moment.
Yeah, at some point he'll have to go and get football, because, like, you know, the I'm just happy to be here stuff isn't going to last forever, although I think he's signed a new contract, hasn't he, in the last little while.
Like, I mean, it's obviously the best gig in world football, third choice goalkeeper, where you're like Scott Carson and you're earning your cash as Manchester City's third choice keeper. Yeah, yeah. He has the best gig in world football, but if you're a 22-year-old kid from Cork, you've probably got a bit of the determination to actually go and play a lot of football over the next 10 to 15 years.
Yeah, the desire to get there isn't suddenly going to leave you. One comment in from the people who are vaccinated getting into the stadiums from Pudding on YouTube says, families, lads, kids under 15 would have to stay at home. The spirit of Dick Clarkin, I think, lives on in that kind.
Well, I would assume that there would be an exception to, for kids, wouldn't there?
You would have to assume that there is, and also the vaccine is becoming more and more available to younger people all the time. So, but yeah, it's, you would have to assume that it would align itself to whatever age group the vaccine is at. So if it's reached 15-year-olds and over, then you've got to have your cert to get in at that age, and everybody else is fine. I assume that would be the way it would work.
There'll just be a collection of 13-year-old anti-vaxxers outside Croke Park bawling their eyes out.
No place for you at Croke Park on All-Ireland Final Day. We already know that. Dick told us that a few years ago, so that's
back to Houston with you.
Remains the case. Let's get a bit more reaction from the game the other night. Stephen Hunt was on with Nathan last night in the football show. He reckons that Irish fans now need to have patience, specifically with Aaron Connolly.
He got himself into the positions to create probably half a dozen half chances, one or two brilliant chances, could have had a penalty kick, should have taken the opportunity when he went down a little bit too easily. So he's getting himself in the positions, but he's lacking that little bit of composure or class or what is it in front of goal. And how, as a manager, does Stephen Kenny work with that? Like, do you want Connolly for all he brings, or are you concerned about the fact he seems to lack that goal scoring touch?
No, I don't believe in that at all, actually. I think, Nathan, it's a very much an early case for a young lad trying too hard, maybe, and not had enough games on an international level to feel as composed as he would do at his club for Brighton. I've seen him score some very good goals for Brighton, play some good performances, not snatching at things. I think the main one where I thought, OK, you may be trying too hard, is where he had a back header at the goal and it was 6 yards out. A calmer, a more experienced Aaron Connolly probably would have taken that down. I tried to take it down and maybe get a back heel off or have a better shot at goal. So I'm not worried about his ability for sure. I'm just making sure probably down the line he stays focused on his football and the front three strikers that we have and other ones that will come into play will have an impact.
Hunty on the football show last night. Well worth checking out, by the way. Loads of interesting stuff to say, including about Matt Doherty, who's a client of his, and he sort of knows a thing or two about him, and maybe revealing a few bits and pieces about why everything hasn't gone exactly according to plan, particularly under Jose Mourinho for him at Tottenham. Well worth checking that out. But Aaron Connolly, on what's your, like, a very frustrating, I think, performance the other night? I mean, look, if he wins that penalty, everybody's going, oh, amazing, Aaron Connolly, this is great, he sealed the game for us. But a frustrating performance to watch the other night.
But there is so much there, is the thing. And of course, it's hard to sort of find hope in that sort of performance, because you're right, it was frustrating, and I'm sure that's what most Irish fans felt watching him. But it's different to other frustrating players we have watched with Ireland down through the years, because Aaron Connolly has shown a glimpse of being class in the past. Granted, that hasn't happened for a while, and that needs to sort itself out pretty quickly at club level for him to have a future in the Premier League in the near term. But he has, I guess, age on his side. He has an incredible amount of pace, which we don't have a lot of in the Ireland team. And there's almost the raw materials there, which you can't coach. Now he needs to be coached into being a better player over the next little while. And making better decisions is something that he probably needs to do. To be honest with you, I felt that there was a lack of confidence in his early exchanges the other night. And I felt he kind of grew in confidence as the game wore on. Like, early on, it was not so much bad decisions when he was coming up against Pepe, for example, on like the left wing. It kind of felt like he just didn't believe he could take this guy on.
Why didn't he take him on? That was the thing I couldn't believe. Stick it in behind him. Like, but Pepe is 45.
Yeah, like, but then the second half, it kind of felt like he was taking him on, and then he was just making bad decisions. And for me, like, that's like more forgivable. At least, like, the decision was wrong, but your intention was based on confidence and backing yourself. Like, I'd love to see the Irish player back themselves in more situations, and that's what Aaron Connolly does. Hopefully that comes over the next period of time. I'm not going to lie, I'm a little bit concerned about the club situation, where there's just such a lack of consistency in what he's doing. Like, I mean, this guy could thrive if he got 30 games in a season. And I say season, not Premier League season. Like, I know he's 21 at the moment, so he'll be 22 at the end of this season. Is there potentially a drop down a division? Could that just give him a real kick, I wonder? Because, yes, he is going to get meaningful minutes for Brighton, but it's not going to be meaningful enough where he feels believed in by Graham Potter. And you can't really blame Graham Potter for it either, because what has he done goal scoring wise since the two goals for Tottenham? Not a whole pile. You're going to have him behind Neil Mopay, you're going to have him behind Danny Welbeck, there's no question about that. So it's a tricky situation, and you can see why he's in the position he's in. I'd just love to see this guy play 30 games a season, because if that confidence bit comes, and if that decision making bit comes, which can only come with a bit of experience, then this guy really can be a top class star in the context of Republic of Ireland. So I'm hugely hopeful when it comes to Aaron Connolly, but a few things really need to sort themselves out with regards to the path of his own career over the next little while for that to actually happen.
It feels like the conversation we were having about Robbie Brady about 10 years ago, and it just never really caught fire from him. I mean, it did at times, but you just hope that he can, as you say, get himself into a good club and stay there and get games. We're going to hear a bit more from Gavin Bazunu now. He was urging the Irish fans to get behind and support this young Irish team.
Yeah, the thing I would say is, you know, there's a lot of young players in the squad, a lot of new names, a lot of people making their debuts. I think you just have to have faith in us. You know, you see the way we played today against one of the best oppositions in the world, and I mean, yeah, we were on the defence a lot, but I think we showed that we could cause them a lot of problems. We had a lot of chances in the games ourselves, so just to stick with us and have faith, we're doing the right things.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. There's a split. I don't know. I even want to take a stab on sort of what percentage is sitting either side. But even talking to people yesterday, there is a split between the people who are like, yeah, get behind this. That's enough evidence for me now. I was a bit of a doubter, but I'm all aboard after the Portugal performance. And then there are the others who are just like, just aren't buying what Stephen Kenny is selling. So it needs results. I think from every aspect of it, he needs results, because even from a confidence of the players' point of view, they can all believe everything that's going well, and we should have beaten Portugal and should have come off. But you know, at some point or another, if the results don't start to follow.
You know. I don't think that that's actually going to be a factor within the camp whatsoever. I can see why it's a factor on the stands, but I surely, if you're a player and you've been involved in what happened the other night, you're not coming away thinking, God, if we won that game, I believe in the manager, but
no,
now that we lose it, I don't believe in it.
Not that game, right? But like, what happens if we... I mean, I don't think we're going to lose to Azerbaijan. Anything close to the performance the other night, we end up hockeying them, right? That's certainly beating them. What happens if we end up like drawing against Azerbaijan?
That's different. Like,
do you know what I mean?
If we're previewing that, then of course, if the result doesn't go their way against Azerbaijan, if it's not 3 points, then everybody's entitled to their criticism. I'm just talking about the context of the last night. And yes, there will be people out there who will remain unconvinced, and their needle hasn't moved whatsoever as a result of the performance the other night. But if you're a player, if you're involved in that group, and you almost beat Portugal, you almost beat Cristiano Ronaldo, I still think that gives you a huge amount of confidence. In the immediate aftermath of the game, I was like, God, the confidence would have come from the results. But the more time has gone by, I'm like, it doesn't matter. You're in that team. You are part of that performance. Surely you know that this is a step forward from where Ireland have been in the past, and you don't need to look at the scoreline to see how well the team did. I think every single member of that team is now believing more in Stephen Kenny after the other night. Now, of course that changes if they get beaten tomorrow. Don't get me wrong, but I'm just talking about the context of Portugal. I think that's a 100% boost in confidence in Stephen Kenny within the camp. I can't speak for the supporters, obviously, because there were just so many varying views, as there will always be about every Ireland manager.
Yeah. John Giles, the legend, back in studio last night. We're going to be bringing you the full chat with Nathan at about 9:30 this morning right here on OTBM. But right now, here he is on Stephen Kenny's future and the fickle nature of football.
He did also say that he felt that the FAI should go, I think, and make that commitment. And yeah, at the end of this one again, say that Stephen Kenny has the next 2 years.
What you said earlier on, it's reasonable. But nothing in football is reasonable. Do you know what I mean? You go from star to bum in 2 matches. In Stephen's case, he needs that time. And what he showed yesterday was an improvement on the other matches. So therefore, you have to back him as much as you can and hope in time that it gets even better.
Yes, John Giles bringing you the full piece about 9:30 this morning. Will says a lot of these young Irish lads on YouTube, he says a lot of these young Irish lads have failed to push on to their club careers, which is worrying. And Darrow O'Toole asking me a question about my Mayo comments of a few weeks ago.
Oh yeah.
I'm going to come back to that. We don't have time on, but I'm definitely, let's come back to that by the time the show is out, because as usual, as tends to happen, I've been misrepresented. It's 8:12. It's Friday morning. Do keep your comments coming into us, by the way. We've lots more football chat in the way. And I do want to mention as well, it's a fundraiser to remember the late Colm Horkin. Charlestown GAA Club in County Mayo are running, you can see all the details on your screen there, running a virtual fundraiser that you can get involved in right now. You can donate, get involved in the virtual golf classic. Just head over to colmhorkinmemorialpitch.com for more details on that, and we'll tweet out those details as well, and you can check them out and do get involved. 8:12, Friday morning. Packed show still to come right here on OTBAM. Do keep your comments coming in. We're going to hear from the Irish international Liverpool captain Niamh Fahey in just a little bit. Former Mayo star Shamie O'Shea as well is going to be talking to Owen. Up next though, Karen Duggan on Irish football.
OTBAM.
It's nearly 8:15. It's Friday morning. You're watching OTBAM, and a very good morning to you, wherever it is you are this morning. And a very good morning now to the former Republic of Ireland international Piedmont footballer, Karen Duggan. Good morning, Karen.
Morning, guys. How are you?
Good, thanks. And thanks a million for taking the call. We've just been debating here whether, you know, there's a split between the glass half full and the glass half empty brigade when it comes to this Stephen Kenny team. Where are you at?
I think I'm with Owen. I think that I was unsure if the whole of the camp were on his side beforehand, but I think there seems to be good buy-in now. And I think key to that was his team selection and the fact that he didn't just go for all the young guys in midfield again. He had a confident Duffy back. He had an uninjured Egan back. And he probably had Matt Doherty's best game to kind of propel the Irish team, and that allowed the younger guys to grow in confidence. So it was the most balanced performance I've seen, despite the fact we didn't have the ball and we didn't have that added pressure of being the favourites tags, and that's kind of when Ireland thrive. So the next game is probably the thing that would give me a definitive answer. At the moment I'm 80% Kenny, but if we can actually dominate possession and create meaningful chances on Saturday, I think then I'll be fully on board.
Like, it feels as if we've ticked every box when it comes to having our confidence battered, right? Like, every which way you could have it battered, the box was, last box was ticked with the Portugal game the other night. Is there any element from a player's point of view where that's almost more damaging than the stuff where you're kind of previously were outplayed, but you can see the development of it? Here we've outplayed Portugal and the result has still gone against us.
No, I think because of the previous batterings we've taken against teams who are ranked lower than us, and all of the media furore that kind of followed that, I think they'll actually still be buoyed by this performance. At the end of the day, they lost to Portugal, who are, I think, is eighth in the world and have the world's top male top goal scoring international. It was frustrating, if anything, but I think after a result like that, where you are the underdog and you nearly do nick it, it almost kind of spurs you on for the next game to go and prove a point. So I think that they'll be well up for it. I don't think that they'll go into their boots after this. I just think that they need to grow from this and start believing again and start having more confidence in their ability to play. Stop overthinking it. I think even at the start of the game, we were trying to overplay those kind of little passes out from the back. And I was a little bit like, then for the first 5 minutes before the penalty, I was very much like, no, this isn't the way we play. We need to start getting results. But as the game wore on, as a fan, even I was growing in belief, and I'm sure that the players were the same.
It's interesting. I think your point is even evidenced by the performance of Matt Doherty, because if the players didn't believe in what Stephen Kenny was doing, then the players who weren't in great form probably wouldn't have a random uptick in form. And Matt Doherty just played out of his skin kind of from nowhere, Karen.
Yeah, I was so surprised, and I've been kind of just waiting for a performance like that from him in an Ireland shirt. You know, we'd seen it at Wolves. He hasn't had the same opportunities as Spurs. So I was wondering if he was kind of just going to be one of these players that we had bigged up again and kind of just coasted through their career without really ever kicking on, or we overhyped them. But his performance against Portugal, I think, proved that he is capable of playing in a top six Premier League team. There was at no point where he panicked under pressure on the ball. He showed his maturity, he showed his ability. He was good in attack, he was good in defence. He gave a Seamus Coleman-esque performance, and I think that's what we've been crying out for so long, because we do want them both on the pitch. For a while it was hard to justify Seamus's inclusion because Doherty was doing so well in the Premier League, but in terms of Ireland performances, Seamus for me has always kind of been the one who's stood out between the two of them, and if it was a decision between the two of them, he'd always get my nod. But to see them both on the pitch and both driving the team on in the way they did, it was fantastic to see. And I hope that this is the start of a string of great performances from Doherty now in an Irish shirt.
Does he keep that jersey even when Enda Stevens is fit? Because if you go back to the Luxembourg game, as far as I recall, the one big opportunity we had, was it Alan Brown maybe who missed it? Or was it James Collins maybe actually who missed it, but Alan Brown maybe was involved in the build-up. But Enda Stevens had cut inside from the left flank and had created an opportunity on the space he had left behind, and that's where the opportunity came from. But because Stevens likes to hug that touchline so much, we didn't really do it again, whereas Matt Doherty, you suspect, given he is naturally a right-sided player, could do that all day long.
I think so. If we're going to be playing the kind of three at the back with the wing-backs, I think Doherty maybe provides more variance in his play. You saw he was really strong down the line. Should have gotten one of the Portuguese players booked early on in that game, just pure power down the line. But he also has the guile to kind of come back in and bring the midfield into the play as well by cutting in off the wing, like you said there, and maybe getting the 10 and the striker's feet earlier. I think, yeah, when Stevens comes back, because again, he is such an experienced player and he's played at the top level, that there is still the possibility that he would join as part of the three, and you could play all of the experienced guys across the back. Obviously O'Shea and Oma Bamadeli did unbelievable in that defensive game, and obviously being surrounded by guys like that is going to help them settle and put in performances, and they'll get great experience from that. But for me, based on the performances of our two wing backs against Portugal, I think they're both going to stay in Stephen Kenny's plans in those positions.
And as an extension of that point, is that our style now? Is that our shape, Karen, do you think, from here? Like, regardless of maybe shifting a couple of people in and out, but that three and the two wing backs, the Ida is the target player, like a Connolly or Robinson, and as you said, across, you know, that strength across the middle and those runners. Is that going to be our shape now, or do you see it as a kind of a mix and match depending on who we're playing?
He's been pretty persistent with it, and at the start, again, I wasn't a big believer because I didn't believe that we had the link player in the middle to make things happen. But I thought that despite all the criticism he has faced, and probably rightly, I thought that Hendrick played that pivot role pretty well. Again, he was someone who was very willing to get on the ball, and his positional sense was just a little bit more attuned than maybe when we had Malumbi and Knight in there with Cullen. So I think with that pivot and the spatial awareness that Doherty and Coleman have on those wing back positions, I think that the balance is good, particularly in a game like that when it's easy to shift into the five. He seems to be persisting, so I think we all have to buy into it. It's in a way, it's nice to see two up top and not just the classic kind of 4-5-1 that we tend to revert to. We call it a 4-3-3, but it's generally a 4-5-1. So, yeah, I'd like to see how it works in a game where we have a lot more possession, and see can we get the movements, get third man running into the box, because I thought that the two guys up front were excellent at coming short. Obviously Ida and Connolly give an option long over the top when we are going direct, but it's in games where we need to break them down, who's going to kind of be the penetrating run, and what we can do in those advanced positions. That's going to be interesting, or are we going to just need to stick to having traditional wingers and getting Collins in the box and Ida in the box for headers? So I'm hoping that it works, but it remains to be seen, I think.
It's interesting the point you make about Jeff Hendrick there, because I think he's probably the source of a lot of frustration for Ireland fans, but I guess we're judging that on him giving the ball away on a couple of occasions, and there's much more to a performance than just giving the ball away, obviously. So you're obviously seeing something more from Hendrick over the last little while that would suggest that he stays in the team.
Just in this one game, I suppose he hasn't been in that position. He was the person who was entrusted to take these balls from our back four, and that he just had the maturity and the confidence to play that role. I felt like just the positioning didn't feel right when it was Malumbi and Cullen in there. So I thought his positioning was quite good. Obviously, we didn't play that much through the middle, but I thought that we never looked exposed. The goals we have conceded have been breaks through the middle where we didn't quite win the second ball, and a lot of the time, yeah, maybe he was kicking it out of play and things like that, but he never left our back line exposed. I just thought the balance was good with him in there, but again, in a game where we do have possession, is he going to show the flashes that we are still clinging on to from 2016? I know you talked about Brady there never kicking on. Hendrick is in a similar boat. You'd love to see him put in a big performance, but yeah, probably still on the fence with him. But in terms of how he worked in that team that was selected for the Portugal game, I think he deserves some credit given all the criticism he has come in for.
We had a clip of Stephen Hunt just a few minutes ago there, Karen, talking about Aaron Connolly and how we need to stay a bit patient. And again, like we talk about frustrating performances, I think he definitely was in that category. Flashes of some really good stuff. What's your, like, some stories this morning that maybe Callum Robinson is back in the mix now post-COVID. What's your sense of Aaron Connolly's role or ongoing role or his performance the other night?
Yeah, like you said, you can see it in flashes that there is the talent there, but he is a bit, inconsistent. Like, I think that he probably would have gotten a penalty had he been staying on his feet a bit more earlier in the game. I think as Irish fans, we look for good, honest work rate, particularly when we don't have the ball and things like that. And in matches, I haven't kind of seen that bust a gut desire from him as much as I'd like to see. And it possibly is coming from game time. I think he was on the ground an awful lot because, like you said, he didn't actually back himself in the first half. So he was just kind of playing for freeze, whereas he should have said, OK, I do obviously have the legs on Pepe. And then when he got in a dangerous position in the box, probably only that one time, he should have earned a penalty. So, yeah, there are flashes, but I agree he needs to be playing consistently because at the moment he's just playing for moments. You know, when he comes on for 10, 15 minutes, he's just kind of trying to create a moment for Brighton. And he was kind of playing like that for Ireland as well, where he was just trying to create a moment where he was winning a free kick or you know, just trying to create something as opposed to actually really getting involved in build-up play and link-up play.
You've mentioned there it's going to be very interesting to see how the great elements of the performance translate into a game where Ireland are now expected to dominate and win. One of the people who might epitomise that is Jamie McGrath, who I think everybody was brilliantly surprised by how well he fitted into that midfield when the pressure was on. Do you think that he's going to be part of a midfield that can dominate in a positive way that will allow Ireland to create opportunities tomorrow night?
I think so. I was really struck by how calm he was. And again, he was always in the right position for Coleman when Coleman needed that little pop pass inside. And it seems like just simple things, but it's just something we've been lacking, just a bit of simple link play that actually goes forward. We do a lot of sideways and backward passing, but I thought he was quite positive in his play. I thought he did really, really well, considering it was pretty much his competitive debut for us. And I think when you have him who has confidence and has the knows he can put the ball in the back of the net, linking up with Ida, who I thought really staked his claim for that starting position consistently. I think that they'll grow in understanding if they get a few games together, and he could be that person who is making those third man runs into the box. And yeah, he could be hopefully that little missing factor we've had in terms of creativity.
Want to talk to you a little bit about the return of WSL tonight as well, Karen, and over the weekend. United Reading, I think it's on Sky later on tonight, 7:45, and loads of build-up to it as well, and a new broadcast deal that we might talk to you about in a second. But there are some clubs, Chelsea, City, Villa, maybe Arsenal more recently, who are clearly investing in their sides from sort of every regard. But is there still too many of the bigger clubs, United, maybe Liverpool, who are obviously in the second division, that still have a lot of work to do to get facilities and rosters up to scratch?
Yeah, of course. I think the standout from last season was there was a bit of fallout in Birmingham, I think it was, and they've obviously lost a lot of players, and which has actually led to a lot of opportunities for Irish girls. They've signed a few Irish girls now, so it's damaging to a club's reputation. So I think clubs are going to start recognising that. I think it taking so long for United to get a team was a big thing, and when they did invest, obviously they came up to WSL1, which was fantastic. And I think in terms of investment, we'll start to see it kind of mirror the Premier League, because the more money a club has, the more they have to invest. And there is a big push, UEFA, FIFA, to grow the women's game, and that's fantastic. And unfortunately, it probably will still be the big money clubs, but that's the development we need, and that's where the fan bases are, and ultimately that's what will help those clubs grow is a major following, and that will pique interest. And now that it's on Sky Sports, I think that that will definitely be reflected in attendances, and the media coverage will obviously grow as well. So I think it's definitely on the up and up.
Yeah, it's monster, isn't it? Like that Sky deal and the BBC deal, in terms of like we can sit here and chat about it and you know, analyse the games and stuff, but like actually from a sporting public's point of view and watching the games and stuff, that to me just feels like a huge step forward.
Yeah, it really is. And I hate to talk about money as much, but money is really what will help the girls develop. The more facilities they get, the better training they get, and that will improve the standard. I think sometimes in Ireland we confuse media coverage with the team's progress, whereas now when it's consistently in our faces, we'll actually be able to correctly analyse games and see who's actually making strides and who's growing from this. And yeah, they're huge deals. I think fair play to Sky and BBC. It would have been easy for them to rest on their laurels and keep just maybe given a few jobs to retired female footballers and things like that, and saying, okay, we're doing our bit here, and maybe just doing the news flashes on Sky Sports News. But no, they're really invested now, and it's great for us in Ireland. We'll be able to see how our own girls are getting on across the channel. We'll be able to pay attention to that, and maybe that'll shine a light on a few girls who should maybe be breaking into the international teams. There's going to be more and more girls going from Ireland to England. It's unfortunate for our league that we are going to lose those talents, but that's something we have to deal with because we're not offering anything in terms of semi-pro development in this country. So there'll be more and more girls going over, which hopefully will translate into our international team.
Yeah, and you mentioned money, and we're happy enough to talk about it in this context. The pay parity announcement that was made during the week, like it's a long time coming, and it's long overdue, but it's a big step, and it's out of kilter almost for most of the international associations around the world, but a huge step forward again for women's sport in this country.
Yeah, I think anytime you reach parity and equality, It's a fantastic thing. It's something that we still celebrate because it's not the norm. Unfortunately, particularly across sport, we still are coming from a lower place when it comes to investment and things like that. So this is a big statement from the FAI to show that it is a new dawn. It's a new era. The women's team are held in high regard, and it's fantastic that we have it. But for me, the most important thing is what's next now, because this is investment in the girls who are already on the international stage. But we're still at a point where we haven't made that major tournament. And much like the development of the WSL teams, it's going to come from investment in the girls in our own country as well. We need more and more home-based training sessions. We can't put all the onus on clubs who are run by volunteers to develop all our clubs. There needs to be more investment in grassroots, more home-based sessions. They were there for a while. They've fallen a little bit by the wayside, so there needs to be a refocus as well. So it's what happens next that I'm most interested in.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on it as well. Karen, thanks a million.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Karen Duggan, on the line there to discuss all things Irish football. It is 8:33, and a very good morning to you, wherever it is you're at this morning. One comment here from John Buckley saying, the Kenny Out Brigade got their answer Wednesday night. Give them a new contract, he says. So that's where we're going to leave that for the minute. We are going to talk to Niamh Fahey in just a couple of moments' time. Bit more football chat, obviously, there. But before all of that, we spoke a little bit about Mayo this morning. We might be coming back to them in a little while. But if there's one man who can capture the essence of that county better than anybody else, it's Andy Moran.
Lads, honestly, no, like, and I'm going to go a bit Mayo-ness here now. Sorry, Paddy, I'm going to get all hillbilly on you here. But that's us. Like that's Mayo. That's not football. That's Mayo people in general. And I've seen it over the last since 2008 when the decline happened in the economy and streets in Castlebar, Clamars, Ballinau, all the main streets were all closed, boarded up, and they've fought their way back. Like many small towns around the country, but that's the way we view ourselves. We view ourselves of a county that would, I suppose, be in the doldrums at times, and we always kind of fight our way back. And listen, we keep coming. And like I think I've said over the last couple of weeks, from the Galway game, particularly the Dublin game, you'd be very proud to have any representation with the football team. And that's why we're a bit daft, we're a bit naive in our thinking. That's why we'd be excited now about the All-Ireland final again. That's why we don't fear them, because we're thinking, sure, if we're not going to try to beat Dublin, who is going to try? You know, we were always the ones that put ourselves out there and gave it our all. We just weren't good enough. My team weren't good enough. But I feel this team definitely represents what I suppose what was said back then. And I think we've a real chance here. I think Tyrone are definitely looking at it the same. But I just think, and I said it last week, I as a player never got that winning mentality. I never got over the line as a Mayo footballer, minor, 21, senior. But these guys have. These guys have gone over that line. And I think this is their time.
Well, we will see. Exciting. Andy Moran talking to the lads. It's and what it all means to Mayo football, of course. Episode 17, imagine, of the Football Pod with Paddy and Andy. You can go and get that episode now to hear the lads broke down Tyrone's sensational win against Kerry. It says here on my script on. Sorry about that. Make sure you've got the OTB Sports app, by the way, because you will not miss the next two episodes. And that's exactly where you can get the latest episode of the Paddy and Andy Pod before everybody else. If you download the OTB Sports app in your app store now, you can get it there and get the hop on everybody else, and then that'll be every Tuesday, and then it's available on the Wednesday right across all platforms. It is 8:36. It's Friday morning. There's loads of comments coming into us about Irish football and the GAA and plenty more besides as well, so we're going to come to all that as we work our way through the morning. We have a live crappy quiz coming your way as well, by the way, a little bit later on. So that is definitely one to look forward to. But I am delighted now to say that we're joined on the line by the Liverpool captain, Niamh Fahey. Good morning to you, Niamh.
Good morning.
Thanks, Mayo, for taking the call. We've just been chatting to Karen Duggan there about all things Irish football. And specifically, we just ended the chat with some conversation about the pay parity announcement that came in during the week. And she raised an interesting point about what an amazing development it is. But what's next? What's your reaction to that?
Yeah, first of all, it's a huge step forward. You can't underestimate the value this puts on for the future generation about how they view themselves as female footballers. So it's an amazing step forward. Obviously, what's next? There's still work to be done on the ground at grassroots level of the Women's National League. So there's plenty of boxes to tick, but we can't underestimate what a momentous occasion this is for the future of women's football in Ireland.
Yeah, the danger is that because it was such a momentous thing and because it's been worked at for so long, that everybody sits around clapping themselves on the back for the next while and not actually focus on the next staging post.
Of course, you get the plaudits and everyone basks in the amazing achievements that they've just done. But there is a steering group in the FAI that are working behind the scenes to work on the issues such as grassroots football, such as underage football. So those issues aren't going to go away and they need to be fixed and addressed. And that's what's being done behind the scenes.
What's the last few weeks been like at Liverpool? You've obviously had the pre-season done, maybe not the most ideal start to the season last weekend, but what's life like at Liverpool as we head into the new season?
Yeah, it's been a bad start, obviously one game, one loss, so we have to go away to Watford this weekend and rectify that, but it's very early days. We had a very up and down pre-season with COVID. It's not an excuse, but there's plenty more football to play and we're bedding in and not a lot of new players with their new manager Matt Beard, so there's a lot of football ahead, and yeah, coming up with Watford on Saturday
and some new competition at the back as well. I see, Niamh, there's how does that change the dynamic things for yourself? Like, I don't think, and I mean, you'll say that every position is up for grabs, but that you necessarily are in that category in terms of been under threat for your role in the team, and particularly given your captaincy in that. What's the new manager that you mentioned obviously has brought in some new options and a new centre back?
Yeah, there's been a whole revamp of the squad. I think we've strengthened in every position, especially at the back. But for me, it's great. Everyone wants competition. It pushes the standards, and it just lifts the whole team. It's what you want. No one wants to get comfortable because automatically our human nature standards drop. The manager's had a good conversation with me. He values me, he values my experience, he values me as a player. So I just have to push hard in training and work for my spot like everybody else.
That must be hugely reassuring in that no matter who you are, no matter what position you are in the club, a new manager comes in, you don't know what ideas they've got or where you sit in their plans. I presume that conversation gave you a lot of reassurance and maybe a lot of confidence.
Exactly. There's no, just because you're captain, it doesn't mean you're going to start. So that just sets the standard for everybody in training. You know, they see that, and there's no cushy little place going to happen for the captain. So everyone's been really pushing so hard, and that's what you want. Again, it just lifts the standard, and it's going to drive us on this year.
It does seem that the WSL 2 is this incredibly competitive place at the moment, where it's almost a rat race to get into the very top tier. Everybody's investing in their squad. The standards are constantly rising, and it has the potential to be this incredibly chaotic and brilliant for the neutral season over the next few months.
Definitely, especially this year. I think it's akin to the men's championship in terms of, you know, the brutality of it, in terms of who comes up, who comes down. There's one spot who can get promoted. So it's really going to be tight. And obviously the investment that's come in, it's really difficult. And then you have the clubs that have been there for a couple of years, you know, the league like the back of their hand, know the tricks of the trade. So it's really a tough league. And we're going to find it difficult this year, as we've seen in the first game already. But it's going to be tight. Every game is up for grabs. So you just have to focus each game as it comes.
Is there much of a shift from the new manager in terms of style and the way you're going about your business? Is any indications on that early doors?
Yeah, Matt's someone who likes a lot of high energy. He doesn't mind if it's a bit of direct football. He doesn't want to pass a team off the pitch. So there's been a bit of a getting used to in that sense. But it's all good things, like fresh manager, fresh ideas, just about the players adapting to them and implementing them on the pitch.
Do you enjoy that? You mentioned the word brutal there in terms of the style of the league generally. Is that something that you enjoy?
Yeah, I like that. It's a physical battle that probably suits to my traits. I know a few of the forwards won't say the same, because you know, we've got a centre half stepping on their toes. So no, that suits me. It suits my game. So I enjoy it. I enjoy the battle every week. So I'm happy to be playing in that type of football.
You mentioned some of the changes in personnel. A lot of goals from different positions have left the club now from where you were last season. I know obviously new players have come in, you'd be hoping that filled the gap. But any concern about that, I think particularly towards the second half of last season, the goals tended to come from a lot of sources from players who've departed now. Any concerns about that ability to score now?
No, none at all. We've brought in Leanne Kernan from West Ham. We've got obviously Irish international, and then we've got Rhianna Dean from Tottenham. And these are really young, exciting players with plenty of goals in their locker. So he's gone for a different type of player as well. He's gone for a lot of pace, and then he's gone for a bit of more physicality. So it's just a matter of time before we click and start reproducing those results.
Yeah, and like Leanne Kernan at Liverpool, lashing in goals is exactly what Vera Powell will need as well. How much chats have you been having with her, and how's she enjoying it there?
Yeah, exactly. What's good for the goose is good for the gander in terms of what Fear is looking at. So Leanne is really enjoying it. She's settling in really well. She likes the fact that she's not too far from home, so she can fly back to cabin when she gets the opportunity. She's really settled in. She likes the club. And there's a good group of girls there that have really welcomed her in. She's a good character. She's easy to fit in anywhere, Leanne. So she'd talk the legs off you. So a lot of them are finding the accent a bit difficult, but now they're getting used to her now.
There's a lot of chat about pig farming, is there?
Oh, exactly. You wouldn't believe the questions they have.
11 points back, I think, was if I'm right, back end, at the end of last season. It's a bit of a gap, obviously. You were third in the table, so not that far off it. But the ultimate objective, have you spoken about that as a squad, about trying to get away from the brutality, as much as you say it suits your game, to get away from that and get in amongst the WSL?
Oh yeah, of course, that's the goal. But as we know from last season, it's extremely tight league, and you know, last season we probably thought we'd bounce straight back up, and that's definitely not the case. So for us, the goal is to just be in and around the mix come Christmas, and then take it from there. You know, there's no setting the stall out about where we should be at a specific time. It's just being about in the mix and being competitive, and then hopefully it'll be good enough by the end of the year.
From being involved in the game for a while, like, how big is this season going to be, do you feel, for not just for your division, but obviously for the top tier, given the Sky deal, given, like, even just seeing the BBC unveil their pundits the other day for the season ahead? It's not something we've seen too often.
No, it's huge in terms of visibility for the game. Obviously, TV, Sky, the likes of BBC coming in is huge. You're hitting audiences you've never hit before. It just helps to grow the game massively. Then you get the sponsorship that comes in and the revenue that comes with that. So it's huge for the game, and it's going to push the women's game on even further. And it's just great to see, really.
Niamh, can I ask you just to slightly go back to the pay parity conversation? You're somebody who has a good profile in this country. You've nearly 100 caps for your country. You're captain of one of the biggest clubs on the planet. What we're post the 20 by 20 movement, the government obviously tried to, I guess, piggyback on some of that. Sport Ireland are doing some good work. We've obviously had this announcement in relation to the pay parity. I guess this is a topic you must think about a bit, but like, what's the next step for us as a country when it comes to moving on that conversation now and that movement with women's sport in Ireland?
It's a difficult question to say, you know, what's next, but there's lots to be done. It's not just about pay parity. There's a lot of infrastructure that needs work. There's grassroots level that needs a redevelopment and overhaul. There's so much neglect, shall we say, in women's sport that needs a lot of resources, needs a lot of time. So yeah, although this is a massive thing, we can't forget all the other stuff that needs to happen. And yeah, it's there's loads of things to what next, really. I'm not involved at that structure level, but I know there are people who are working massive, like Sport Ireland, who are doing great things for women in sport and women in leadership positions to grow women's sport in this country.
Is it important to tell the stories, do you think? Because, like, anecdotally, we've certainly heard stories from various inter-county teams where, like, facilities, you've sort of hinted at it there, around GAA, are not up to scratch, or in relation to football, where they're just not up to scratch. And sometimes people are less willing to talk about those stories because the movement itself has obviously moved on so much and it feels as if you're nearly taking a backward step to talk about it. But is it important in some regards that we tell those stories and bring that kind of stuff to light?
Definitely. You have to highlight issues. I know people don't want to seem like you're keeping on bringing up the same narrative or complaining and things are negative, but if these things don't come to light, then they can't be fixed. Personally, with the GAA, I'd like to see the Ladies Gaelic Association amalgamate with the GAA. I think that would solve a lot of problems in terms of fixtures, use of pitches. And I think that step really needs to happen, but for different reasons, it's not. And I think that would really help with the Ladies Gaelic at the minute.
Yeah. Can I ask you as well, I'd seen that you were on the record 3 weeks ago, yourself and Jordan Henderson were out endorsing the taking of the knee and the rationale and the reasons behind it. And obviously it's back in the headlines again this morning after the England-Hungary game last night. What's your sense of, as a captain of an institution in British life, what's your sense of what needs to happen now, Niamh? It looks as though, in many instances, including last night, the taking of the knee is not as effective as everybody would hope. What needs to happen, or have you any thoughts on what can happen here to try and eradicate this stuff?
I know people have said it's not effective, but it's still happening. So clearly it's effective, and it's annoying certain sections of crowds when you go to away games. So it is important to keep doing it. It may not be effective in England because a lot of it is stamped out, but when you go to those countries, there is a high element of racism. It's hard. Where do you educate a whole country? You try and do it through sport. So banning people from stadiums is one immediate thing, and making sure that people feel the repercussions. But it's at a basic level that you demand standards and respect for each other. So this is an individual country's problem, I think, in terms of how they educate their citizens, really.
It's interesting, isn't it, the way, I guess, a lot of sports people have, I guess, become more aware of the social responsibility that they can have if they speak out about issues like this. Is that something you've become more aware of over the last couple of years, especially given your role as captain in the last year?
Definitely, sports people have a huge platform, and you've seen that with Naomi Osaka, you've seen that with Jordan Henderson, you've seen that with Marcus Rashford, the platform that these superstar sports people have to use their platform for voices of change. Sports crosses many boundaries, and race and religion and all these things are one of them. So when people see their stars or their idols speak out like this, it has such a powerful impact to implement change, and it can only do good, really, as we've seen.
Yeah, well, your voice is powerful too, and it's well put over the last few minutes. Niamh, thanks a million. Best of luck for the season. Hope things turn in the right direction for you starting tomorrow. Thanks a million for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Cheers. Bye. That's Niamh Fahey, Liverpool captain, on the line there. And yeah, plenty of comments coming into us on that and other things as well. Bring you those before 10 o'clock. And I think we've to have a conversation about Mayo at some point on. So we might do that very shortly. But a reminder that OTB AM is brought to you every morning by Gillette. Good mornings start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. Now, plenty coming up, as I said. Going to bring you the latest from the Paralympics after 9 this morning. We're going to have a live crappy quiz. But right now, it's on in conversation with the former Mayo footballer, Shemi O'Shea.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Okay, we are delighted to be joined by AIB GEA ambassador Seamus O'Shea of Brayhew GEA and formerly of Mayo ahead of the All-Ireland Senior Football Championship final as longtime rivals Mayo and Tyrone meet in a mouth-watering final to round off the toughest knockout season of summer football. Shemi, how are you keeping?
Good, thanks. How are you, Nan?
All good. Has the mood in Mayo changed slightly at all since Tyrone have been confirmed as final opponents?
I don't think so. No, I'm not in Mayo, so I wouldn't know. But,
right.
I wasn't hugely surprised by the result of the weekend. I'm not sure if anybody else in Mayo was. So I kind of expected them to play in Tyrone. But no, I don't think the mood has changed. I think, you know, regardless of the result, the lads are looking forward to the game and hopefully getting a win.
That seems to be one of the themes over the last couple of days, that maybe playing Kerry would have been more straightforward in many ways, that there is a sense of maybe the unknown and there's a more complicated opponent, I guess, in Tyrone.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, to be honest. I think in a weird way, it's easier set up against them because there's a couple of key matchups you have to look after. I mean, Clifford is the obvious one, then Sean O'Shea. And like, if you can nullify those two threats, then you're probably doing a pretty good job. Also, Kerry probably aren't, sorry, there's no probably, they're not as good defensively as Tyrone are. So they can be got at there. And then it's probably not dissimilar to Dublin in a way. Like, you know, like the lads had key matchups with Conor Callaghan and Kieran Kilkenny. With Tyrone, it's just a bit more difficult because while they don't have, you know, that one player that's probably as good as David Clifford, nobody does. They've got a whole load of players that are really talented that aren't a million miles off that. And it makes that matchup discussion just a little bit more difficult. So, like, even the last day, like, McCurry had a quiet game and was well marshalled by Tom Sullivan, and he came good late on. McKenna had a quiet enough game for most of it, but obviously came through with those two huge scores. So, and obviously McGeary, like, was man of the match. And even for him, like, he had a brilliant game, but I think he missed four opportunities. So they've just a whole load of threats throughout the pitch that makes it difficult for Mayo to match up. But, like, I think Mayo are probably similar in a way in that it's difficult to match up with Mayo as well because they have a lot of options throughout the field.
What was your experience then of watching Mayo versus Dublin? You saw your former teammate Andy Moran up on the big screen numerous times, jumping out of his seat. Were you similarly animated?
Yeah, I was pretty animated, right? Yeah. It was hard to watch. Yeah, I was saying it was the first time I was at a Mayo match as a supporter since I was a kid, I'd say. Maybe since the final in 06 or something like that. So it was a strange experience. I wasn't at the Galway game because I was at home and I didn't travel to Croke Park. But yeah, it was a really strange experience. And obviously in the first half, it was hard to watch and I was concerned for the lads. But I got pretty animated in the second half and obviously like just delighted for the lads. And it was pretty emotional towards the end and thrilled that, like, you know, obviously we've had great battles at Dublin over the years and that team isn't quite as good as it was, but it was great that it was Mayo that finally put an end to their run. So I was just thrilled for the lads that were involved.
Did you get a sense in the aftermath of last year's All-Ireland final that the gap had closed considerably between Mayo and Dublin?
I felt it was closing before that, to be honest. I felt like over the last number of years, Dublin have been on the slide a little bit, but the rest of the kind of chasing pack weren't quite able to catch them. They were still the best team in the country. And even if you look at last year, okay, Dublin looked pretty comfortable during that last quarter, and I don't think we really had a chance to win it. But at the same time, like, that was a pretty inexperienced Mayo team. Like, we had a whole load of fellas that were in their first season playing football, and we were in the game with, you know, 15 minutes to go. So, you know, certainly I felt like, yeah, there's not as much of a gap there. They're coming back to the chase and pack a little bit, and it's only a matter of time. And like, that's to be expected. They've lost a huge amount of, you know, really talented players. So look, it can only be good for football. Just glad that it happened to be us that got one over in the end.
Did a different version of James Horan appear when he came back into that Mayo dressing room? Was there a different type of manager during his second stint, one that has taken him to beating Dublin, which he hadn't, which I guess was a rare occurrence before in his first stint. But was there a different edge to him at all when he came back as manager?
Well, we beat them in 2012 when he was there as well.
Yeah, sort of, yeah.
So, I'm not sure. I think, like, James is, look, he would have obviously learned a lot since he was there. I'm sure he's tried to improve things from his first stint. He's gained a lot of experience. He's been involved in club teams over the years and in the meantime. I think fundamentally he's the same individual, he's the same manager. And like, you'd have to give him credit. He's done something similar. Like, there was a huge transition period during our time back in 2010, 2011, and brought us on a great run. And he's done something similar now to get to back-to-back All-Ireland finals in a period where he lost a lot of players, and he's brought through a huge one of fellas. Is an incredible achievement. So, like, he's done a brilliant job, and fair play to him.
When you're watching that Dublin game, what was your emotion when Aidan gets taken off? Because it seemed in extra time when he's coming back onto the pitch, that was certainly the sign of a man who had no problems with being taken off. There was no bad blood there whatsoever.
No, Aidan's been around long enough at this stage to know that, like, look, things didn't go well from the last day. James made a decision to take him off, the same as any other player, and that's fair enough. So, look, I think Aidan was just delighted for the team that they got over the line, and he's an opportunity now to have a better game in the final. So that's what he'll be focused on. He'll obviously be disappointed in his own performance the last day, but, you know, it happens to all of us. You move on and you try and improve and get it right the next day.
And that's almost an ace up the sleeve of Horan going into this All-Ireland final, is that it will be a talking point about, does Aidan O'Shea start? I'm sure he will, but where does he start if he does make that starting 15? So what's your suspicion? I'm sure there's nothing being shared with you, but what's your suspicion on how he might be utilised in the final?
I think they're pretty settled at midfield, like Maddie and Diarmaid or Conor Loftus. I think that's been going well. So I don't know, because I'm obviously not privy to what's going on anymore, but I would expect them to play either full forward or centre forward. But look, maybe James and the management team have other plans, I'm not sure, but it gives them a good focal point in the full forward line. And if he can win ball and he gets the likes of Brian O'Donoghue and Tommy Conroy and some of these fellas coming off him, it also takes away a lot of attention from some of those players, maybe gives them a little bit more room. So, look, we'll see what happens, but I'd expect him to play a big role anyway.
How happy was Conor with his contribution in the semi-final?
I think he was delighted. Like, he was like everybody else. He was, like, Conor's had a tough time over the years where he's been in and out a little bit, and he's back now the last year, and he hasn't played much up until now, but it was great to see him come in and make such an important contribution. I think he was involved in the Evan Comerford turnover, the one where he got pulled for steps, and then he was involved, obviously, at the end in terms of forcing the 45. So, he made a big contribution. Obviously, that's the score that ended up drawing the game and forcing it to extra time. So I was delighted for him. It was great to see him get back involved again and see him get a game at Croke Park. So thrilled for him, and hopefully he can push on from that now and have another impact in the final.
How has that been for you this year, not being privy to those conversations that are happening inside the Mayo camp? When do you realise that they're not quite telling you everything?
Yeah, I don't ask, to be honest. It's not my business anymore. You try and stay away from it. You don't want to put lads in a position either where they have to, like, tell you to go away or lie to you. So, obviously, I'll chat to the lads and ask them how they're getting on and stuff. But in terms of what they're doing and how they're setting up and all that kind of stuff, you leave them at it. And Yeah, unfortunately, it's, you know, I'm finished now, so that's it, and you kind of just aren't privy to those conversations, but like, it's fine. It's fine.
And will you be looking after your tickets now for the final?
Will I be, sorry?
Will you be the designated family member to look after the ticket allocation for the final?
No, definitely not. No. I only found out recently that apparently former players get a ticket to the All-Ireland. So that was nice. That was a nice bit of news to get. So no, I let the lads look after the ticket, or dad look after the tickets. I did nothing to do with it. And I'll pick up my allocated ticket and go to the game as a supporter.
Shamie, I did want to ask you about Matthew Rouen, who is having an incredible season. You obviously would have played alongside him quite a bit and watched this guy rise to become the midfielder that he is. What is it about him, particularly in 2021, that has made him, I guess, close to an all-star level, if we're predicting it at this point?
Yeah, he's just matured as a footballer, I think. I think early on, first of all, as a midfielder coming through, it can be difficult to make an impact because physically it just takes a little bit of time, more so than other positions. And Matty probably felt that early on. And you can see the work that he's put in to get himself physically prepared to play at this level. And he's in unbelievable shape. The other part of it is he's just mature as a player. I think starting off as a young fella, he would have been inclined, he would have been inclined to make a few mistakes, needless errors, things like that, where he'd do two or three good things and then two or three great things. And he's just become a more consistent player in that respect. He doesn't try and force the issue a little bit, and he understands when there's an opportunity there for him to take it, and has just become a more kind of composed and consistent player. He's an incredible athlete, so he's consistently trying to force his opposition onto the back foot and get them running towards their own goal, which is a difficult thing as a midfielder to manage for 70 minutes. So, he's a really important player for Mayo, and he's been excellent so far this year, so it's great to see him going so well.
How do you manage to find that composure as a young midfielder? Is there anything you can work on specifically? Is it literally just bad experiences and good experiences that get you to that point?
Yeah, I think it's just probably experience. It's understanding that not every play needs to be a brilliant one. Sometimes you can just pick out a simple pass and move on and just bide your time a little bit, be patient. And the kind of opportunities that you're looking for, particularly as an attacking midfielder, they'll present themselves if you're a bit more patient rather than going looking for them all the time. So I think it's just a part of it is just becoming a little bit more mature and getting that experience or that game experience consistently year in, year out, that allows you to get to that point.
It does seem, and you mentioned it there, that being a midfielder in the modern game is a little bit of an unforgiving position given the way the game is played at the moment. So it does kind of come with the territory, doesn't it, that you are going to have a few tough years as a young midfielder, because I guess if you're going to make any mistakes, they'll be pretty glaring errors, or so they'll seem at the start.
Yeah. And look, that's the same for any footballer. Like, it's a big step up. And in fairness to the lads, there's a whole load of young fellas that have come in and over the last number of years. And to be fair to them, they've done brilliantly. To be in their second All-Ireland final in what for many of them is their second year in the panel, and to be playing at the level they're at such a young age is a credit to them. The rate of improvement that they've shown over the last couple of years has been brilliant. And I think they're well off their peak even yet. Like, we should expect them to improve and get better over the coming years. So hopefully that bodes well for us over the next few seasons as well.
Did you realise immediately when these guys were coming in last year and the year before that this was a special group of players?
Yeah, to be honest, it jumped out straight away. I remember when Oisín Mullen came in a couple of years ago, he came in after an under-20... They got knocked out of the under-20 championship, and James brought him in for training. And within 10 minutes, I was there, oh, lads, who was this fella? And it was the same when I went in last year. I hadn't seen Tommy Conroy play much before. And as soon as I saw him, what he was doing inside the training, I was blown away, to be honest. So it was pretty obvious early on, to be honest. And I was excited watching them because I could see in training what they were capable of. And it was pretty clear that they were very, very good players.
What was it about them that took you by surprise that little bit?
I think it's just like it's a difficult environment to come into. Like, when you're coming into an experienced team like that, it takes a little bit of time. What often happens is you'll see a fella come in and have a good session or two, and then they get found out because they're, fellas get used to them and their tendencies and things like that. And these fellas were just consistently good week in, week out, and it, like, they just fit in straight away and very quickly became really, really important players to the group and leaders within the group. So I think that that was probably what stood out for me, that it wasn't kind of just a one good session here or there, like that these fellas were top players that were delivering week in, week out. And, you know, so it's no surprise to me really that they're performing at the level they're at.
You're going to be asked this question so much over the next 10 days, but is this going to be the year?
I don't know. I hope so. We'll see. Look, I think they have a great opportunity. I think it'll be a really tight game. The way Tyrone play, it'll likely be a very tight game. Both teams match up pretty well together, I think. And it's a tough matchup for both teams. As I said, there's not kind of one player that you need to worry about or need to stop. But both teams are fancy. Tyrone beat us. It was the last year in the league to stay up. We have a good record against them in the championship. But I think they're fairly evenly matched. And hopefully we can come out on the right side of it and get a good performance.
You have been listening to, for the last few minutes, AIB GAA Ambassador Seamus O'Shea of Brafe and formerly of Mayo, ahead of the All-Ireland Senior Football Championship final, as longtime rivals Mayo and Tyrone meet in a mouth-watering final to round off the toughest knockout season of summer football. Seamy, great stuff. Thanks a million.
Cheers, on. OTB
AM. All right, 6 minutes past nine. It's Friday morning. There's great news in our next segment. It's our Paralympics report brought to you by Phil Egan every single morning, 9 a.m. thanks to Toyota Ireland. Hashtag start your impossible. Phil, what have you got for us?
Well, yes, as you said, great news. Ireland celebrating a fourth gold medal at the Paralympics in Tokyo, and Katie George Dunleavy and Eve McChrystal won their second gold medal of the Games. The Irish pair finished the 92-kilometre race ahead of world champions Great Britain and Sweden in a time of 2 hours, 35 minutes and 53 seconds to win the Women's B road race. The three teams are neck and neck in the final stages, but Katie George Dunleavy and Eve McChrystal made their move on the home stretch to win the race. Dunleavy came fifth in this race in London 2012, got silver in Rio in 2016, and now has the gold medal. They're going to leave Tokyo with three medals, and obviously they claimed silver earlier in the Games in the B 3000 metres individual pursuit before winning gold as well in the women's B time trials. So as things stand, Ireland have a total of seven medals, so four golds, two silvers and a bronze. There was other Irish in action in Tokyo today. Rochelle Timothy finished 11th in the C1-3 road race, while Ronan Grimes was also 11th. That was in the C4-5 road race. Martin Gordon and Eamon Byrne withdrew from the B race in the early stages of that one. In canoeing, Patrick O'Leary narrowly missed out in a place in the KL3 200 metres final. He did win the B final. The Cork man put in a season's best time of 42.203 seconds to finish in fourth place, but only the top three went through to tomorrow's final. Now, he will be back in action tomorrow in the semi-finals of the VL3 200 metres. And swimmer Patrick Flanagan missed out on a place in the final of the S6 100 metres backstroke to bring down the curtain on Ireland's interest in the pool. The Longford man put in a season's best time of 1 minute 26.81 seconds. He came fifth in his heat. He was 17th overall. A reminder, you're listening to our Paralympic report on OTB AM, coming your way every morning at 9 o'clock, all with thanks to Toyota Ireland. Hashtag start your impossible.
10 past 9, live crappy quiz on the way. John Giles 2 before 10 a.m. this morning. But the last few weeks in Golf Weekly, there's been a lot of debate around handicaps and handicap cheats. Specifically, Nathan Murphy has just recently got a new handicap. You can be fairly certain he's not one of the cheats.
So I haven't had an official GY handicap for the last few years. I've just been floating around. So I had to put in my three cards. I'll talk you through my three rounds. So first round I went out very inconsistent, as you would imagine, but was happy with my 3 wood off the tee. Didn't feel I needed much more. Went to the spa well, Gary. Peter Lawrie comes out, takes one look at my swing, goes, nah, what's going on with the backswing? Way too slow. Now, I've spent every round for the last 2 years trying to slow down my backswing. I go out for my second round and all that's in my head is, need to speed back up my backswing. I'm not lying. It's been the most humiliating experience of my life. The first three tee shots did not get past the tee box.
Yeah.
Did not get past the tee box. And then I went out and I handed in my third card again. Massively inconsistent, terrible golf. Do you want to know what handicap I am now playing off?
Go on. Shock us.
29.7.
Two of them right there.
I'm almost certain that my 73-year-old mother-in-law is playing off less.
30.
So if anybody is looking for somebody for a competition or a four ball or you name it, I may well be your man. Now, I probably deserve to be playing off that, but I'm hoping that I can improve rapidly. Is there any prize for like the quickest drop in handicap over the course of a year?
Nathan, you'll have to come down to the K Club and I can sort you out if you want.
Fantastic. Fantastic, Gary. Are you I'll
have you down to scratch before Mayo win the Sam.
Wow, that's only about a week away, Gary. That's only about a week away. Yeah, there's that. Peter, obviously, you know the golf swing and all that. I'm just wondering, like, I don't know if you know my golf swing. Like, I went to Tim Rice. You know Tim in Spawell? I can hardly recommend Tim. I was up there with a mate of mine, Connor, about a year ago. And Tim came along and said, pop in for a sec, I'll take a look. I felt like the world's greatest golfer walking out. Got a lovely swing. Don't need to do much. Couple of little subtle changes, but oh, you've got a lovely swing. You got a lovely swing. Makes a couple of little subtle changes, and I feel I've got a lovely swing. 5 minutes with Peter, and it's, that swing ain't going to get you anywhere.
The shiner, and I was in close proximity when that shiner was picked up. I don't know. I haven't listened yet to Golf Weekly, and I will do. I don't know if he's come fully into the story, so I don't want to say too much. But he's a lucky man. Lucky man to be able to host Golf Weekly at all this week. Handicap at 30. Oh, my word. That is a short clip from this week's Golf Weekly podcast. If you want to hear the full thing and listen to any of the exclusive interviews in the show, you can head over to otvsports.com/Golf Weekly. You can sign up to their Patreon. Just a few weeks away, of course, from the Ryder Cup. You won't miss out on any of the good stuff to come, right? It is 12 minutes past nine, and it's time for a live crappy quiz. Chris Bond.
Oh, you're kidding me! September.
Kyle Lafferty.
Are you joking me?
Is that right?
I know! Is that right?
Anybody else? Leash, was
it? Like, that is one of the most stupid questions.
Darius Vassell?
Seriously, you all need to just stay quiet. This is getting really annoying doing this quiz.
What is going on here?
Welcome. Welcome along to the shoutiest segment on Irish radio. It's the scintillating, it's the stupefying, it's the splendido crappy quiz. Every Friday, we pit three of team off the ball up against each other in our no-holds-barred quiz of sporting factoids at the end of the week. It's been a while, but here are today's contestants. Our first contestant today sprinted to his local tattoo parlour after John Egan's goal on Wednesday and got the face of the nation inked on his chest. He pulled the plug after Ronaldo's winner, though, and is now walking around with half of Stephen Kenny's face tattooed on his body, ready to get the job done with 3 points tomorrow night. It is Phil the Power Egan.
Morning.
You're welcome back, Phil. Good to have you.
Yeah, I was all set for the headlines to be written yesterday morning. Egan scores the winner in Portugal. Ah. You know, it's what I dreamt of as a kid.
That was the joke, wasn't it?
Next week. That was fair.
I thought that's where you were going. I was like, obviously, he's got to get John Egan and claim some. Oh, no, it's Stephen Kenny's half face has got tattooed.
Yeah, it's
good that you're workshopping this in a live environment, though. Well done.
Bad start. Our next contestant today is constantly refreshing the Kildare GAA homepage, waiting for comunicado oficial on the future of Jack O'Connor. He's looking forward to having his heart broken again to feel that acute sting of a departing manager willing to abandon their adopted county. Give it up for the artist formerly known as the Mustachioed Menace, Ger Gilroy. Welcome, Ger.
It's nearly November again. The moustache is making a comeback.
Is it?
Yeah.
Nice.
So is yours. You just don't know it, Jess.
I don't know it, yes. I was watching Ted Lasso yesterday and admiring his beautiful tash, and that is the barometer. So that's where we need to get to this November. Ger, you're welcome back. Phil, you're welcome back. Phil's in for Tommy, by the way, who was a late pullout, and I'm going to blame that on the intro. And our last contestant today is back from his trip to Galway, and boy is the West happy to see the back of him. He drank 400 cups of coffee of their homemade crap, he said, made 40 different baristas cry, and declared that the West Coast produces a pathetic excuse for a flat white. Give it up for the coffee snob, Adrian. Who's your daddy, Barry?
Oh, and you don't know this piece of crucial information, but I did actually go into a coffee shop in the west of Galway and ask for a flat white. I was laughed out the gap before somebody behind the counter said, oh, actually, I know how to make one of them, and then promptly, or 10 minutes later, produced a latte. You can't believe the levels of disgust for me. I stormed out of there after drinking the latte, which wasn't that bad, actually.
Oh, you must have been incredulous.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Unbelievable, Jeff.
It's funny how It's funny how Owen makes you out to be the world's biggest wanker, and then you top it.
No, there's nothing. I can't hide from it.
Like, this is like, these are like caricatures. No, it's just,
I like a flat white. What can I say?
What was it? You said in the office one time, it was like the ratio of milk to coffee is just perfect.
It's true.
As ever, the format is a classic crappy quiz with a series of questions on a range of themes, and it's onto the slip and slide of trivia, which is the rapid fire round. You can podcast the crappy quiz on otbsports.com or on the OTB Sports app. And if you're watching on YouTube, please give us a thumbs up. It really helps. Please send any questions you have via postcard to Crappy Quiz Quizmaster, Off the Ball Towers, Marconi House, Diggs Lane, Dublin 2. Round 1 is the boring questions round, never multiple choice. Question 1 for Phil, which was definitely not a question that was meant for Tommy. This year will be the first year we will have seen Mayo and Tyrone both in an All-Ireland final. Who were the counties the last time we had a first-time All-Ireland football final fixture?
Ooh, that's tough. Not that tough. Well, maybe it is.
I think I'm back. Is it Tyrone Armagh 2003?
No, it's not.
No, that was what I was about to say.
It's actually Donegal and Kerry. 2014. Donegal had obviously only played in, was it 2-3 finals before then? None of them were against Kerry, and 2014 is the first time we got that. Ger, question 1 for you.
I've got to say, I thought that question was look, not to help Phil so early in this, given that he's probably going to ramp home by a winning margin of 10 points. I thought you meant the first time that we had two counties both making their debuts in an All-Ireland final. That's how I, but he obviously said Tyrone, so.
Yeah, well, Tyrone is just my, Tyrone and Mayo, not.
My own stupidity.
Yeah, absolutely that. Sure. Jamie McGrath is the first Meath man since who to represent the Republic of Ireland in senior international football?
Is there a sub goalkeeper? Oh, was there a tall red haired sub goalkeeper?
That's very specific, Ger.
I have somebody in my mind.
All I can picture is Adam Bogdan.
Don't mention those words around me.
Tall red haired goalkeeper. Cleveland Keller.
Blonde, is he not?
Yeah, a bit strawberry blonde, I guess. Yeah. We actually need to find that out. Is Cleveland Keller ginger?
Is strawberry blonde or are you red?
I need to push you on for an answer here, Ger.
It's called Dirty Fair, I believe. Graeme Stack.
No. Anyone know?
There was none.
Daryl Lenihan. Adrian, question 1 for you. Name Katie Taylor's opponent this weekend.
Jennifer Hahn. Boom. It was an ad for like 10 seconds
Come on.
Ago.
Come on.
Did you not? When the ad came on, did you hear that? I heard Jennifer Hahn.
I heard Adrian.
It's always a go to question for Adrian. Name Katie. I remember Christina Linardatu, who was a good one.
That's right. I remember giving that a stab.
Linda Trow, I think, is how you pronounce
Linda
it.
Linda Trow, that's right. I thought you'd go a bit, but I have to say, I'd actually done a little bit of prep. I thought you might ask who did she beat the last time, Natasha Jonas, as we all know.
I was thinking maybe like how many Americans has she fought, that kind of question.
Yeah, well, it's not, it's the good old
Listen,
black and white.
They're only easy if you know the answers on, that's what you're saying.
Well done, Adrian. Round 2 is the painful Irish Knights round. After Ronaldo's head killed our dreams of happiness this week, we will also walk down the painful memory lane of Ireland getting crushed in the failures of tournament qualifications past. Phil, question 2 for you. From the night of Henri's handball, there is still one of the 22 starting players still playing in the Premier League. Who is it?
Oh, my word.
Oh. Oh, that's a tough one. Yeah. Still playing in the Premier League. Okay. I can't even think of the team that starts. I just think, obviously, Kev was playing, Duffer, Keane. Oh... Shane Long.
No. Of the 22, sorry, you could have gone through France as well. Hugo Lloris.
Ooh. Sorry, I thought you meant Ireland.
He did say the 22.
I said 22,
yeah. Still to a point there for not listening.
So starting 11, when I heard 22, I was thinking squad, even though the squad's 23.
Hugo Lloris is the answer. Ger.
Yeah. It's Friday, lads. I'm struggling here.
I was, because in fairness, I was thinking that was a gimme for Phil. Ger. Question 2 for you. What nationality was the referee in the 1981 clash between Belgium and the Republic of Ireland, whom Owen Hand accused of taking a bribe?
Oh,
We're sluggish this morning, I think it's fair to say.
We haven't had our coffee.
Hungarian.
What was that?
Hungarian.
Hungarian? No, he wasn't Russian. Hungarian. No. Anyone?
Portuguese.
Sorry. The question's not going your way, Phil.
I would have always thought if it's a dodgy referee and you're not sure, go Russia.
Wow. Dump.
Oh, you can't libel an entire nation, I don't think.
No, you just did. what would we say? Crappy Quiz Master, off the ball towers, Marconi House, Diggs Lane, Dublin 2. We've lost Jura, by the way. We'll get him back in just a sec. That's where you can send your lawyer's letter, Mother Russia, if you want to get in touch with Adrian. Adrian, question two for you. Ireland's concession of a 90th minute equaliser against Macedonia in 1999 prevented a team from appearing at Euro 2000. Who pipped Ireland to top spot in that group? You can go 2-0 up here, Adrian. Big opportunity for you.
Go, give me again there.
Who topped Ireland's group in qualifying for Euro 2000? They finished second. They wouldn't have done so.
Well, he hasn't a clue.
No, but I mean, that's not going to stop me from having a stab.
Give us your stab there.
I'll say
France. England. Germany.
Try Spain.
No, it's not Spain. Anyone?
I was going to go.
Yugoslavia.
Yugoslavia. Croatia finished third.
They weren't in my thinking.
Round three is the Premier League manager or dream team character round. In this round, I'll give you a list of four names. Two of them are characters who have managed Harchester United in dream team. The other two are real life people who have managed in the Premier League. All you got to do is name a Premier League manager. Phil, which of these has managed in the Premier League? A. Chris Hutchings. B. Jimmy Craig. C. Ian Coates. Or D. Steve Wigley.
Oh, sorry. The first one you said Chris Hutchings.
Chris Hutchings, Jimmy Craig, Ian Coates, Steve Wigley.
Okay, it's between A and D. I'm trying to think.
So two are and two aren't.
Ian Coates was dream team. He had desperate problems. Yeah, desperate problems. It was around the time Luis Amor Rodriguez kind of was at the club.
Well, let's not forget that Ron Atkinson managed Harchester United as well. So there could be some crossover between real and fake here. I mean, could there be a trick question?
See, there's a caretaker aspect to this. That's what it is.
There is, yeah. A couple of these answers are caretakers.
I'm going to go with Chris Hutchings.
Correct. You could have also gone for Steve Wigley. Yeah. You were on the right lines. Yeah. Hutchings managed Bradford in 2000, Wigan in 2007, and Wigley managed Southampton in 04. Jerry, you want to come in there?
I keep disappearing. It's because Tommy keeps messaging me. Not only was his late pullout causing issues for everybody today, but he's also ruining my shot. That's why I'm...
One out, Tommy.
Yeah, stop ruining Jer's shot. Jer, question three for you. Which two of these, give me any Premier League manager from these, I should say. A. Luis Amor Rodriguez. B. Velimir Zajec. C. Patrick Doyle. D. Paul Sturrock.
Paul Sturrock.
Correct.
That was handy.
He managed Southampton in 04. The other one was Velimir Zajec. He managed Portsmouth in 04-05. So Phil and Sharon both drawn level with Adrian. Adrian, to keep your nose in front, you have to get this correct. Which of these is a Premier League manager? A. Alain Perrin. B. Francesco Guidolin. C. Stuart Naismith. Or D. Don Barker.
Alain Perrin.
Correct. Portsmouth 05. Guidolin, obviously. Swansea in 2016 was one there as well. Well done, lads. Three from three in that round. We're back on track. Adrian, you're on 2 points. Sharon, Phil, you're on one. Round four.
Were there many foreign managers like in Harchester and Dream Team? Or was it a bunch of Patrick Doyles?
Luis Amor Rodriguez, as I said, former Harchester United.
Like realistically named foreigners?
No, I mean, like Casa Amor Rodriguez is a very realistic name.
He wasn't even, the actor wasn't even English.
Oh, there's no way.
I think I think his name is Martin Cruz.
Who was doing a dodgy accent like? Yeah. Oh, wow.
Classic.
Wow. Dream Team really was Brexit before Brexit, wasn't it? Round four is a fun-free magic number round. Contestants get 3 points for getting the number exactly right. If no one manages that, the nearest contestant who doesn't go bust gets 2 points. The second closest gets 1 point. I'm going to say that we can only accept the answer that's written on your paper, and I'm going to have to ask for your pens once the music ends. So if you don't mind, give us the following number. The number of All-Ireland hurling titles won by Limerick, plus the number of Paralympic medals Ellen Keane has won during her career, plus the number of All-Ireland finals Mayo have played since last winning an All-Ireland, plus the number of laps completed at last week's Belgian Grand Prix. Your 30 seconds expire when Sinatra sings Bright Shiny Beads.
So, how many All-Irelands do Limerick have in hurling? How many Paralympic medals does Ellen Keane now have? How many All-Ireland finals have Mayo played since last winning an All-Ireland? And then how many laps did he get through in last week's Belgian Grand Prix? Tot them all up. What do you get? Jer?
22.
Phil?
26.
Adrian?
27.
The answer is 26.
Oh, shitballs! Oh!
The number of All-Ireland hurling titles won by Limerick, Phil?
10.
Correct. The number of Paralympic medals Ellen Keane has won?
2.
Correct. Number of All-Ireland finals Mayo has won?
I put down 12.
12. And the number of laps completed last week?
Total guessed, I went for 2.
2. Phil Egan with the golden fun free magic number round.
Only for Shane Hammond.
I mean, Gerard Gilroy is always the first person, and Adrian Barry as well, to complain. It's like, oh, I had certain answers right. Do we give Phil an extra few points here because he got a golden?
Let's bring in that rule starting tomorrow.
No. And sorry, this morning I got up, I said, Alexa, play OTB Sports Radio on TuneIn, and she duly did, and an old crappy quiz came on where I was making the point that this round is kind of shit because the person who is winning goes first and then just answers all the questions and the game is over and it's really boring. And actually, everybody can stop watching now because we all know Phil's going to win.
Oh, no.
I made the point then that we should change it and reverse order it. And even in this instance, I would let Adrian go last or first.
Well, just in this one instance,
I would make it. But you are last.
No, you are.
Yeah, you. No, I've got a point there. Oh, I didn't get any point because Phil
got
it right.
Hang on a second. Hang on one second.
So I'm last. Yeah.
We've got Alex McCarthy in the box.
I think there was four laps as well.
In the Belgian Grand Prix.
Let's double check this because if this is true, then there's a brand new world order here.
Okay. Well,
hang on. It's also 12 including replays. That's not right. It's 9 is the correct answer.
Yeah, finals. The finals include replays.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't.
Oh, yeah. No.
Yes, it does.
No.
Does.
How many years? No.
Owen's the quiz master. Now, let's see.
On.
If this is 4 instead of 2, then suddenly I'm in clover here and the two lads are.
No.
Well, you're gonna have to try and find out for me pretty quickly.
Alex
here.
Is on it. Are you, Alex?
I'm gonna have to go with the answer that's written on my paper.
No. We have an opportunity here to write this wrong, Owen. Let's just press pause for one second.
I thought it was.
If this means you winning, like, Adrian, I mean, no, we don't. It's two
lap.
I agree.
It was Hamilton Blast 2-lap Belgian Grand Prix farce is the headline I've got in front of me. So we're moving on with the quiz. That's where I'm getting
fact check it. Fact check it.
I literally just did. The fact checking is so slow from Tommy, who's messaging me, who apparently thinks it's all. Also, four laps. I don't know where he's getting that from, but I'm hearing from two different people.
I'd written four, and I actually believed it was four as well.
It's not. We're moving on to the final. Our winner tonight will be decided in the round that separates the men. What? We're moving on to the final.
Four,
tonight
and we have the information, and we're ignoring it.
Like, okay, so like, if he's saying, so sorry, you're saying you're sure it's four. Where are you getting the information from?
This is great radio, lads.
Well, I don't understand.
There's a 2-lap minimum rule, but they actually raced 4 laps.
Tommy said he was listening to Alex in the box. It's 2 laps. It's 2 laps. We're going with 2 laps. We're moving on to the final.
We're moving on to the final.
Correct answer was 26.
Tommy Rooney's got in touch to say it was 2 laps. We're moving on to the finals. And the order here is Phil first, then on to Adrian, and then on to Jer. Phil, are you ready?
I was ready about 3 minutes ago, yeah.
Are we ready in the box?
What are the points totals before we begin?
The 4-2-1.
You sure?
All right, Phil.
I'm on 2, am I?
Your 40 seconds starts now. Dublin's Evan Comerford plays for what club?
Ballymun.
Correct. Who's the England under-21 manager? Too long. Lee Carsley. Yeah. Daryl Horgan plays for what club, Adrian?
Southampton.
No, Wycombe Wanderers. Name any of the host countries of the 2026 World Cup, Ger.
America.
Correct. Who will referee this year's All-Ireland football final?
David Coldrick.
No, Joe McQuillan. Named a Meath women's football manager, Phil.
Eamon Murray.
Correct. Who is Manchester United's record signing? Too long. Paul Pogba. Hector Bellerin signed for which club this week, Adrian?
Tottenham.
Real Betis. Who was Ryder Cup's captain in 2018, Ger?
For which country?
For Europe, sorry. It doesn't make
who was Europe's Ryder Cup captain in 2018? Europe's Ryder Cup captain in 2018 was Bernard Langer.
Thomas Bjorn.
Thomas Bjorn. Absolutely. That is absolutely correct. But it doesn't matter. Phil Egan is your winner.
Is that the worst rapid fire round of all time?
Probably is. Can we get the winner music, please, for Phil Egan?
Let's just draw discreet. Now, this crappy quiz never happened. It was officially the crappiest quiz that there has ever been.
Well, there's still a Stewards Inquiry.
I did say to the lads before we started, I said, I am struggling. It's Friday. And I mean, it showed. I couldn't even remember Lee Carsey's name. I was trying to think of Manchester United players.
It's been a long week. Everybody's a bit frazzled.
We have
some excuses.
I'm frazzled because we've got bad information. I'm going through all. I'm gone to gpfans.com. Signed suggest Belgian doubleheader at home for absolute nonsense. Two lap race. I'm seeing two lap race referred to in multiple different places. All you can do is go with what's written in front of you. I apologise for the delay. I'm still hearing stuff in my ear.
Farcical.
Take it away, Phil.
There was definitely a spoiler in there. Somebody was trying to spoil my moment.
Yeah, just really trying to destroy your moment, Phil.
Yeah, but I think absolutely, joke. Yeah. Maybe we just put this one down as never happening.
Yeah, we should, and I apologise for that. Bernie Ecclestone has blasted Formula One's handling of the farcical two-lap Belgian Grand Prix. Check and double-check and quadruple-check your sources. That is this week's crappy quiz. Phil Egan in acrimonious circumstances is your champ.
It's the crappy quiz. Right, lads, good luck to you. You can head off. Thanks a million. It's 9:31. It's Friday morning, and lots coming up across OTB Sports Radio over the course of the morning. We did want to get to one final thing before we head off on, which was a comment earlier on from Dar O'Toole, I think it was, on YouTube, who said, did I miss Adrian apologising for calling the Mayo team the eunuchs of the All-Ireland? Which was in reference to some comments that were made a couple of weeks ago. Now, I never said that, is the thing. And also, like, anybody who's been following the Off The Ball Twitter account over the last 48 hours will have seen that I was also misrepresented in relation to the stuff I said about Seamus Coleman. So it's not unique, but it's definitely misinformation. What I said specifically was that Mayo were the Varus of the All-Ireland. And the eunuch reference was actually in relation to the loss of the two, Oisín Mullen and Killian O'Connor, the two, you know. And so that was the eunuch reference, and that's how that came about. But the extension of the analogy into everything else was not about, and I was quite conscious of this, Owen, as I was walking around Westport and Mayo in general over the last couple of weeks, that my comments being misrepresented could have resulted in my downfall. But it wasn't, as you may or may not corroborate, actually what I said about Mayo.
I think that you owe Kevin Kilbane an apology, to be quite honest with you.
Well, I think actually he seems to have more of an issue with you than he does with me.
So his tweet from the day of the All-Ireland final, sort of snob Adrian Barry has compared Mayo GAA to a character from a geeky make-believe TV show with monsters and dragons. Yeah, you know, I apologise for that. It's a disgusting thing to say.
No, I think that the point that if I could just bring up the tweet that I responded to him to more sort of succinctly make the point that I'm about to butcher. But the point that I was making to him about Varys specifically, and anybody who's watched Game of Thrones will be acutely aware of it, that he's a really likeable character, one of the most popular characters in Game of Thrones, who's always in the conversation when it comes to talking about who's going to be the next anointed, but never quite gets there. Now, so that's Varys. He's a really good character. Everybody's behind him. Key player. Always in the conversation. So many positives. Like, yes, he's also a eunuch, but that was not the point I was making in relation to Mayo.
Adrian, we can dig this hole even deeper next week and the day before the All-Ireland. Like, do you stand by what you said?
I stand by the point that I made about the Killian and Oisín Mullen being absent. And like, look, I don't know what the story with Oisín Mullen is. I hope he's back for the final, I'm not sure, and Killian obviously won't be. And look, I'd listen to Shevy O'Shea earlier. I'm going to spend the next week trying to seek out and listen and read and watch as much as I can that's going to help me change my mind about how I currently think the final is going to go, which my belief at the minute is that Toronto are going to win it. I don't feel good about that, but that's what I'm feeling.
I think that Kevin Kilbane and his fellow Mayo people will thank you for that, and we've put the kiss of death in them many a time already this season, not least because you described them as a eunuch. So not doing that next week, I think, is good.
I'm off to seek out that information over the next week. Owen's off to flagellate himself for probably the final week before he moves on from the pain of last weekend. Owen, good man, enjoy the weekend, talk to you next week. Stay tuned, OTB Sports Radio, across the day and an off the ball across the weekend. We're live from 1 o'clock on Saturday and on Sunday. Live commentary of Ireland against Japan on Saturday, by the way. Stephen Doyle and Stewie Byrne going to bring you that way. Corey Staunton's going to be in Croke Park for us on Sunday for the All-Ireland finals there. Dublin up against Meath, and Westmeath also in action. OTB AM brought to you every morning by Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors.
OTB AM with Gillette. Put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.
What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere, visit hyland.com.